Good evening, everyone. This is the first Planning Advisory Committee meeting of, of the year? Yeah. Since Council has done their appointments to the committee, as staff, I'll call the meeting to order. My name is Jeff Merrill, the Director of Planning and Development Services for the Municipality of the District of Lunenburg. Where we do have new members, maybe as the first order of business before we get into the nomination and election of chair, if we can go around the table and introduce ourselves. We'll start on the far side. Larry?
Larry Hagel. I'm from up in Maplewood, and this will be my second year on the committee. Thank you.
Councillor Wendy Oikel, I'm a municipal councillor assigned to the committee.
Carolyn Bolivar-Getson, mayor for the municipality, and also usually ex officio, but tonight I will be a voting member.
Councillor Sandra Staton, I represent District 6, which is Pine Grove, Northfield, Oak Hill, Cookville, that area. And welcome to the new members.
Hi, I'm Michelle Greek. I'm a councillor for Bars Corner, Parkdale, Maplewood, across to Walden, down the Cornwalls. And this is my first meeting here on PAC. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is James McCarrick. I'm a member of the community on the PAC and live in Oakland. This is my first night attending, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Great. And we have two of our members joining via Teams. Kathleen, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Kathleen Long. I live on Tancook Island, out in the beautiful waters of Mahone Bay. And I am really pleased to be on this committee again. I was with this team last year, and I've been happily able to join again this year. So I do look forward to being there in person at some point and hearing about all of the exciting things our planning teams have been up to.
And Casey?
Thanks, Jeff. Hi, I'm Casey DeLong. I'm also a municipal councillor. This will be my second go-round on this committee, and looking forward to rolling up our sleeves. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have some staff in the room. I'll ask staff to introduce themselves. We'll start with Darren.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Darren Shoup, senior planner with the municipality.
Hello, everyone. My name is Pyeongjun Kim, the municipal planner for the District of Lunenburg.
I'm Jennifer Harrietha, and I'm the administrative assistant.
Thank you, everyone. The first order of business is the nomination of chair. So what I'll do is I'll call for nominations. Everybody should have a ballot. Those online, I'll ask that if you want to email your nomination to me, we'll include that in the ballot. And then what we'll do after we do the nomination, we'll do the election of chair, and then I'll turn the meeting over to the elected chairperson. So the first ballot would be the nomination of chair. All right, so for the nominations of chair, we have Councillor DeLong. Councillor Oikel. Anne Meck. Councillor Statton. Councillor Greek. And Kathleen Gray. I forget which order I went in, but Councillor DeLong, do you accept the nomination of chair?
No, thank you.
Okay. Councillor Oikel, do you accept the nomination of chair?
No, thank you.
Anne Meck, do you accept the nomination? Okay. And Kathleen, do you accept the nomination of chair?
It's very kind, but I will decline. I'm hoping there's still somebody there.
There is.
Councillor Greek, do you accept the nomination?
I respectfully decline. Thank you.
And Councillor Statton, do you accept the nomination?
I respectfully decline.
Okay. So there will be, we don't need a vote, and Meck will be our Planning Advisory Committee Chair.
Congratulations.
So this round, I will call for the nomination of vice chair.
Did we lose Kathleen?
Off, Kathleen.
And Councillor DeLong, there it is. Just got it. Thank you. So nominations for vice chair, Councillor Oikel. Councillor Greek. Councillor Statton, Larry Hagel, So for nominations of vice chair, we have Councillor Oikel. Do you accept the nomination?
Sure.
Larry Hagel, do you accept the nomination?
I respectfully decline.
Okay. Councillor Greek, do you accept the nomination?
I will also respectfully decline. Thank you.
And Councillor Statton.
Respectfully declines. Thank okay. you. But thank you for the vote.
She's here all the time. She was here all the time. I'm not worried.
Okay, so Councillor Oikel will be our vice chair. Does she want to ask for a motion to destroy the ballots?
So we're looking for a motion to destroy the ballots. Councillor Greek? Seconded?
And I'll second it.
Councillor Oikel? Carried. Right? Is that how that goes? Oh, yeah, all those in favor? Opposed? Motion carried.
Would acknowledge that we are in Mi'kmaq, the ancestral and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people.
So first we're going to do a review of procedure for public to address the committee. An opportunity will be provided to all citizens to address the committee on each item under committee matters shown on this agenda or added to the agenda by the committee. Individuals who wish to address the committee are asked to note the following. On each committee matter on the committee's agenda, the chair will seek public comment upon the completion of staff's presentation. Each person shall state their name. All statements and questions shall be directed to the chairperson. Presentations shall be limited to 10 minutes. Persons wishing to address the committee a second time will be given opportunity to do so once all others in attendance have had the opportunity to address the committee. Persons addressing the committee for a second time shall limit their presentations to 5 minutes.
I'll just add where we have closure due to the COVID, we are live streaming on Facebook Live. So anyone joining us via Facebook Live, if you leave comments in the comments section, staff will monitor those comments and will share those with the committee when we open the public input section. So please leave your comments if you're watching live.
So we're going to ask for a motion of approval of the agenda. Councillor Greek. Seconded. Councillor Oikel. All in favor? Opposed?
How would you like those online to signify?
Put your hand up.
Yeah, people put their hand up. That's what we've been doing before anyway. So opposed? Motion carried. So next is approval of minutes.
Yes.
So there's a motion. We're looking for a motion for approval of minutes of Wednesday, July 7th. And are we doing them separately or together?
Yeah, you can do them separately.
Okay, so approval of minutes of Wednesday, July 7th, 2021.
I'll move that. We approve those minutes.
Okay. Councillor Statton, and looking for a seconder, Mr. Hagel. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carried. Now we're looking for approval of minutes of Thursday, October 28th, 2021. Councillor Oikel, seconded. Councillor Statton, all in favor? Opposed? Motion carried. And we have business arising from minutes.
Yep. So we put it right here. So headful rezoning application.
Okay, so the headful rezoning application update, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and good evening, everyone. So this is a quick update regarding the last item that the Planning Advisory Committee has recommended to the Council on our meetings of October 2021. So the Council has met, and they have conducted the first reading in November, in which and Council further conducted the public hearing as well as a second reading to accept the recommendation from the PAC, and then approve the rezoning application from McCarthy's Towing and Recovery Limited in order to allow their new building for reconstruction. So that council approval has been forwarded to the province, and the province has endorsed the council's approval on January 19th, 2022, in which 8 days after that date is the effective date of the rezoning application. So the McCarthy and the applicants are now clear to apply for their building permit to further and to basically to construct their new building. Thank you.
Okay, so the next order is Planning Advisory Committee Matters, 7.1 Bylaw 020E, Osprey Village Plan Review.
And Mr. Kang has prepared a presentation this evening for the committee.
Thank you very much again, Madam Chair, and good evening to our honorable committee members and the members of the public who are joining us live on MODL Facebook page. I'm pleased to rise before the committee tonight to present the first of the many initiatives that the municipality is undertaking to tackle housing crisis in our region. So ever since the pandemic, it became more apparent that the housing crisis is not just a Halifax problem. It is happening in here in our municipality as well, and this is supported by the latest census data we obtained earlier this month, which indicated that this is the first time, at least after 1960s, that the rate of population growth in our municipality has surpassed the rate of new home construction. With higher demands and lower supply available for housing, the market value of housing is skyrocketing. Over-asking on the property became norm in parts of our province, and with that, the property valuation is also rising. We also have some initial data revealing that the rental housing situation in our region is also currently developing. The new rental rates are significantly pricier than the existing rental currently under the provincial's 2% rental cap. I had to find that out in the hard way when my friend was moving to Bridgewater. And then, to be frank, I was quite shocked to see what's currently on the market for like a rental accommodation and also and its availability in our municipality. There's also other factors like any uncertainty from global and national event is fueling the inflation rate, and which is also affecting the housing price in our region. So, of course, the solving housing crisis is not easy. All levels of government must work together to overcome the barrier, as this is a very complex problem requiring a sophisticated solution. But the situation are not waiting for us. It's the surge of residential demand are accelerating. The new construction in our area, especially those of higher density dwelling. We already approved 160 units in Osby Village. We are, and 288 units are currently pending approval with this plan review. And the staff is forecasting that we're expected to see even more demand over the next 10 years. And we're also expecting to welcome 1,200 new residents in the community of Osby Village alone. So after many discussions with the council members and what we heard from our resident, the municipal government determined that this is an urgent situation. So the conclusion was that we need to do something now. So what can the municipality do? Well, one of the powers that the municipal council has is regarding land use regulation. So it is possible to craft the zoning regulation in a way that it fosters affordable, attainable, and rental housing in our municipality, so that we are one step closer into solving this housing crisis. And how do we do it? We want to achieve our goal by encouraging higher density. We also want to reduce unnecessary requirement during the permitting process. We also want to reduce any type of red tape for those developments that are appropriate in the region, also compatible with the existing land use. Part of this review is to revise the placement of certain land uses in our area. So the one on the left is what we have right now since 2006, where it looks like a set of colorful puzzle pieces. And it was intentionally done because of the proposed location of Champlain Drive was planned to connect with Harold Wynot Road. But that is not reflective of what is going on right now. And there are also other limitations currently present in Osby Village, so such as that commercial uses are permitted in certain zone, and in the case of a zone that encourages mixed uses, it is currently mandated that you have the ground floor reserved for commercial uses only. And for those area currently forested and at the back of Highway 10, you're only allowed to build single detached and semi-detached dwellings only. And this is why we're proposing what is on the right with different, slightly different colors. So you see the blue piece right in the center. That's the institutional zone. That's the area there we would like to promote public-related area so that so those related uses are centered in the community.
Councilor, if there are questions being asked, we can't hear them online.
Thank you. This is Councilor Oikle. I just wanted to make sure that our new James understands that the inn, the blue area, is where we are right now. Right? Is where this building is. Okay. This area. Okay. Thank you.
Just to Councilor DeLong's point, we did have a technical difficulty, which we have since solved. The slides weren't showing on Facebook Live, so that was the question that our mics weren't turned on for.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Please continue, Byung-jun.
Thank you very much. So, what's beside the blue pieces are the red, and currently labeled GC, which stands for General Commercial. The intention of the zone is majorly for commercial type of uses, but despite the name, is actually it is also allowing for mixed uses of both commercial and relatively higher density residential uses. And those zones are strategically placed along our major corridor, which is Trunk 10, as well as a little area on Pine Grove Road, where we expect to see, in fact, we are experiencing heavy traffic currently in the area, so the determination from the municipal staff was that the compatible uses around those heavy traffic area is to have more uses towards commercial or at least higher density residential uses. To compensate that, we got the orange zone at the back, which is currently vacant for a slot right now. So that is intended for the majority of this part for the residential uses. We decided to place that towards the back, so the resident moving in the future would enjoy they would have the quiet enjoyment of their neighborhood. Because it is fully serviced area, we are proposing that we would like to encourage the future development to be relatively higher density compared to other developments in our municipality. So we'll have more details in a further slide of what that entails. We're also tidying up some zoning boundaries, as if you notice the previous one, so I'll just flip back a slide on the left, the zoning boundary that is currently in place does not match with the property boundary that is existing today. So to be consistent with what is on the field, the staff has realigned some of the zone boundaries so that it matches with the existing and the proposed property boundaries in the near future. What the staff also suggesting is that is to consolidate the two zone currently in the Lunenburg Municipal Industrial Planning Area, or commonly known as the that Osprey Ridge Golf Club, which is currently which is the purple area zoned as Lunenburg Municipal Industrial Zone, which we renamed it to Light Industrial Zone with exactly the same permitted uses and the other regulation that is currently in place today, as well as the yellow area, which is currently zoned as mixed residential, intended for mostly residential uses. And again, same consideration. So there are currently existing dwellings there, so we wanted to respect that and trying to promote the current environment of the residential nature. That yellow area also contains the area where this planning advice committee amended in last year regarding the application for the villas at Osprey Ridge, where the applicant proposed 24 units of duplexes. So this plan review would not affect any of those two existing and proposed development. We would like to honor what the PAC recommended to the council, in which the council approved. So we're just changing the name, pretty much. We're not actually proposing the changes to the regulation for those area. We just wanted to make the zone, the color and the name, consistent with what's there in Osprey Village, so people can have more consistent wording in the land use bylaw, so it's easier to read and interpret what that means. So speaking about zoning, let's dig a little bit further into that. So we're going to start with the blue one. That's the institutional zone intended for public uses. So the proposed uses in the zone allows any public uses that you can think of. So any government services, so like this building, emergency services, such as like a fire hall, for example, any type of community uses, cultural uses, recreation uses, you're permitted to make community gardens, educational, medical, religious, and the list goes on, basically. And the intention is that, the area of that zone is to be used for public services, public purposes, so that when the future resident move into the area, all those amenities that the people like to use will be right in the center, so it's more accessible to the entire community. We also have the red zone, the general commercial zone along our major corridor, especially along Highway 10. And as the name suggests, it is proposed to permit almost all commercial uses except certain uses, because we want to make sure that we want to make sure the future development that's coming into this area are compatible with what the council is visioning for this region. So so staff is proposing that we would exclude, so in other words, prohibit uses such as adult entertainment, which has been banned since 2006, wholesale uses, warehousing, and vehicle sale uses, in which if you would find the common theme of those three uses is basically the car-centric or vehicle-centric uses. For Osprey Village, just considering that it is currently fully serviced area, we would like to promote more higher density, in which allows us to implement some urban planning principles such as a walkable community, where it is actually possible for people to have, you know, walk around with sidewalk, and maybe there's some local shop that you don't have to pick your car on, and then they can stay in their neighborhood for daily uses.
Excuse me, Mr. King, there's a question.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm wondering about what do you mean by limited drinking establishments? Are you talking about the Liquor Commission? Are you talking about a pub? It's not very specific.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank our honorable committee member for her excellent question. So the last phrase mentions the limited drinking establishment. So the wording in the land use bylaw that is proposed is that if someone proposes to build a drinking establishment licensed by the Nova Scotia, I suppose, Department of Business, there's a condition that drinking establishment must be away at least half a kilometer from any of the institutional uses. So specifically, we're talking about schools, we're talking about medical uses, we're talking about any type of religious uses, because this is a recommendation from the Nova Scotia Public Health, where when we're thinking about placing drinking stuff, it could be bar, could be an NSLC store, it should be at least certain distance away from school children in order to promote other public health regulations.
I just have another comment. Perhaps we also need to say it's alcoholic drinking alcohol rather than just drinking, because could have a pot place or a milkshake place like what's downtown. That's drinking, right? So you might want to be specific in that it's alcoholic related. Perhaps I'm just suggesting.
Absolutely, and thank you, Madam Chair, again, and through you. Thank you for the good point. In the land use bylaw, there will be definition of what a drinking establishment is, and we're actually copy and pasting what the provincial regulation states. So when in the provincial act, when it says drinking establishment, it actually specifically say those established who got the alcoholic drinking license from the Department of Business. There's a legal definition, so we are absolutely going to make that clear, that when we say drinking established, we're not banning cafe near school. We're specifically talking about alcoholic beverage establishment. So, but thank you for your clarification.
I actually have an additional question in the same vein with that, Mr. Kang. Is about, would it be also something like vaping or like marijuana sort of stuff? That would all kind of, would it just be like adult, considered adult establishments, I guess? Is that?
Yeah. Thank you again, Madam Chair, for the question. And I think you brought up a very interesting point, and I'm sure the Director of Planning Development would assist, because we had this discussion a few years ago where in terms of cannabis or the things like that, like what type of use is that? Is it if you're growing something, is it considered agriculture because it's technically growing plants? What about the dispensary? Is that considered retail? But I'm sure our director of planning has more to add there.
Yeah, I think to your question, I think really the intent would be the sales or establishment that would use that. And really what it is those beverages or products that you have to be of a certain age in order to use them. And where we do have a school in Osprey Village, like the best practice for in the health side of things is that those uses should not be located within a close proximity of uses like a school or a daycare or those types of uses. So that could look to clarify that point.
Okay, thank you very much. Madam Mayor?
Yes, just to that, I guess one of the things that people have inquired for this area has been a liquor store, a bank, and does this exclude it from anywhere here at Osprey Village altogether for the retail sector? Because, like I said, that has been something that people have asked for many years on this side of town. So I just want to make sure that we're not putting an exclusion in here, because I think we've actually been trying to maybe attract some of these things.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for the question. So the currently proposed wording is that, so so staff is not proposing to ban drinking establishment in all commercial zone. Is that it is permitted in the commercial zone as long as it is at least 500 meters away from the current institutional zone, which is at the moment is the only use is the school.
Yeah.
So that's basically as long as you're 5 to 7 minute walk away from the school, you are permitted to build as long as you stay in that red commercial zone.
And I believe drinking establishment, if I could supplementary, is really a pub, bar, this type of establishment in the definition, is it not?
That's correct, since the legal definition from the province is that you get a license from the province to operate such retail stores selling alcoholic beverages.
So it's not the retail sector of selling alcohol.
Thank you very much. Oh, yes, again. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. So could we go back to the map of where the red section is? Okay, so as long as if one of those places are in that red section. So we're not saying over by Walmart, where all that land is over there. That's not part of the red section, right? We're just saying right here, right?
So yes and no. So you're right that it would have to stay in that red area. Where Walmart and Canadian Tire and Walmart and Canadian Tire and Dollar Store are, which is currently colored white. So that is currently unzoned area or to be zoned area where staff is currently not proposing implementing a zoning regulation. So at the moment, it is still allowed because there's no zoning regulation. So it would be permitted right now. When we talk about the MODL 2040 project in the next, I guess, several months or so, it will eventually have to be determined, which color that whole area is going to be. But at the moment, it's not prohibited. You're allowed to construct such establishment in the wider area.
Please continue there, Mr. Kemp.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. So back to commercial zone, permitted uses. Most of the commercial uses are permitted. We're still permitting certain light industrial use, which, I mean, technically is labeled light industrial use, but are a lot more compatible to commercial uses such as bakery or crafting workshop or printing establishments, which typically are attached with the retail portion of it, those uses are also proposed to be permitted in the red general commercial zone. There's also you're also permitted to build a building related to residential uses. You see the conditional phrase, which says minimum of 20 units per hectare. We will cover that on the next slide. But for now, those certain higher density residential uses are permitted in the commercial zone. And anything that was listed in the institutional zone would also be permitted in the red general commercial zone. So going back to what is exactly 20 units per hectare, that's a residential density, and one of the power that the council has is to limit minimum or maximum residential density in the area. So I'll give you an example what 25 units per hectare would look like in the municipality. So in a typical single detached dwelling that we have in our local community, so this is the example from our municipality. We calculated the average. It turned out to be around 15 units per hectare. If you have semi-detached, so that includes attached dwelling or duplexes, that is around 30 units per hectare. So when we say minimum of 25 units per hectare, single detached houses would not meet that definition, but semi-detached, as is shown in the diagram, and the credit goes to Statistics Canada for the visual elements, it would be permitted. So the intention in the general commercial zone, again, it goes back to what we discussed, where because it's very close to major traffic corridor, there was a discussion as to does it make sense to have lower density residential uses so close to the Highway 10 where there are 8,000 to 9,000 cars traveling every single day. The staff determined that it would make more sense for those single to, I guess, duplex buildings to stay slightly distance from such a major traffic corridor. So we're going to discuss that actually on the next slide. But if you want an example of what residential density could mean, so typical row houses in our area, 65 units per hectare. And I thought I would bring a real-life example. So what's Stone Mound building in terms of its residential density? We calculated it was determined to be 85 units per hectare. So you see what the numbers kind of mean, and then you can gauge how dense we're talking about in terms of those units per hectare number. Okay, so continuing the theme of residential uses, let's talk about the two residential zones that is on the floor today. The first one is the what is codenamed R2 zone, or medium density residential zone, which is proposed to be on the other side, closer to golf courses. So that is the current dozen or almost a couple dozen residential property along on Danica Drive. It also includes the property that is proposed to host phase one of the villas at Osprey Ridge development. So because it's a residential zone, residential uses are permitted. And you see the conditional clause again. It says maximum 4-story. So because it's safely distanced away from, I guess, the major traffic corridor, it is partially serviced area. Staff determined that maybe high density, like apartment style resident, like it doesn't make sense. Maybe it's suitable in other places like Osprey Village right here. So those those existing subdivision on Danica Drive and the golf course, we propose the maximum height of 4-story. Because that's the current regulation of what's there written since, I believe, 1999. So we're basically copying and pasting the regulation in that document onto this Osprey Village document so that those existing tenants on Danica Drive would not be impacted by this plan review. The medium density residential zone also permits supporting uses things like home-based business, short-term rental, parks and public open spaces, which are, again, already permitted as of today in the area. And there's a little diagram in the bottom left, what the differences between medium-density apartment or high-density apartment are. What we're encouraging is what's on the left. So like a smaller, I guess we're fine with things like slightly bigger than duplexes, but we're not necessarily looking for, say, like a 10-story apartment on Danica Drive, because that would be a lot, huge. But where we would like those high-density development would be, it would be where we're sitting right now today in Osprey Village. So R3 zone or high-density residential zone are proposed. I suppose it'll be challenging to see for those currently watching on Facebook, but those of us who are in the building, okay, it is pitch dark. However, on Mason Cerrillo Road, and the other side of the Mason Cerrillo is currently forest, and I know there's a deer family of six currently residing there, as I've been walking there frequently. So that forested area is currently proposed to be high-density residential zone. Currently, it is zoned as two-unit residential zone. In other words, you may build single detached dwelling, and you may also build attached dwelling and duplexes. So we're really changing the regulations right there. So instead of saying you can only build one or two unit, we're saying you're not allowed to build one or two unit. You have to build more than that. We want you to build higher, more densified, because you have the fully serviced area, and infrastructure costs money. It costs a lot of money to put it there, and it costs a lot of money to maintain it. So from the corporate finance perspective, and also the efficient use of the existing infrastructure, if we were to promote higher density multi-unit dwelling from the perspective of municipal budget, it helps us to keep our strong finance basis, because again, infrastructures cost a lot of money. So that's why we're proposing a minimum of 25 units per hectare. Again, that includes attached dwelling, duplexes. We're just saying maybe not single family dwelling, but like again, duplexes and those uses and anything denser are fine. It is okay. And other supporting uses, again, home-based businesses, parks and public open spaces. Staff has proposed additional uses, namely neighborhood commercial uses. So because we're encouraging multi-unit dwelling, there's going to be a lot of foot traffic. And it's a lot nicer because we got the market, that it actually makes sense for like a little corner store, like a convenience store, like a little restaurant to be in a walkable distance so that those future residents could enjoy, and again, they don't have to drive their car to visit their favorite restaurant.
We have a question, Councillor Statton.
Through you to Juan. When you say short-term rental, can you describe that to me? Because that's the bane of my whole summer, is getting complaints about short-term rentals and a group of X number of people coming in and partying 24/7 for 2 or 3 days, and they're gone and leave a path of destruction behind them. So when you say short-term rental, what do you mean by that?
Thank you for the question. And so you do, Madam Chair. So short-term rental, so in this proposed bylaw, we're using the definition from the province, where basically it's a dwelling unit that is used for vacationing public, and that has compensation, and then the person who's staying in those units are staying 30 days or less. So it's opposed to long-term rental, which includes like month-to-month, quarterly, or annual rental. We're talking about, a common name or common terms for short-term rental would be things like Airbnb.
We have a couple more questions. First, First, Councillor Oikle. I'm sorry, it should have been the mayor.
Councillor Oikle, okay. Would not a hotel or a motel be short-term rental under those considerations of what you're just saying? And you could easily put a motel or a hotel back there.
Right. Excuse me. Sorry. But thank you for the question. So we did have discussion about this. And so it's the area, again, currently vacant. During this discussion, it was concluded that that area at the back would be more suitable for more residential uses. And by residential uses, we mean the quiet neighborhood type of style where uses like hotel and motel, which would be included in the definition of short-term rental, would be more suitable in a slightly more along the major traffic corridors, so such as where currently Best Western Plus is residing. So I suppose the staff is proposing that if you would like to build buildings like hotel or motel, we would prefer the applicant to look for properties in that red zone, which is along Trunk 10 and Pine Grove Road.
Thank you.
We have one other question.
I guess when I look at this and I see short-term rentals, I understand where Councillor Statton is coming from here. Short-term rentals has taken on that Airbnb phenomenon that is currently causing us quite a bit of grief in our municipality. Not everyone, but we definitely have issues with short-term rentals. So what I believe I heard you say is that a short-term rental could be a hotel. Is that correct, or is this just the Airbnb that we're putting in place for this area? And I think I probably will totally disagree with that, if that's how we're advertising this, because right now we know that people are buying up a lot of residences in our municipality for the Airbnb market. And the housing crunch that we're trying to address is to get people into long-term housing accommodations. So I would hate to see us put something out there that is bought up by the Airbnb individuals, because actually as a municipality, we're working with all the municipalities in Lunenburg County to try to address the issue that we have with Airbnbs. And this has been a discussion at the mayor's warden's table for the last few meetings. So I don't know if there's a way around this or whatever, but actually having it in writing in a zone will cause us grief. There's no doubt in my mind.
May I ask for clarification, Mayor? Are you saying that to say that it's prohibited would cause grief?
No. But this isn't prohibited, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, our honorable mayor, for your...
Am I reading this wrong?
for your question. So I'd like to clarify, and then perhaps we could hear more debates on this. So I wanted to make sure that under the high-density residential zone, the short-term rental uses are prohibited.
But I'm looking at the medium.
Right. That is...
And they're not prohibited in that medium.
It is permitted in the medium density. Or it is proposed to be. It is currently permitted in the existing residential zone we have today, both the Bacon Lot in Osprey Village as well as those subdivision in Denica Drive. Currently, it is permitted. And what the staff is proposing in that, well, at least the Bacon Lot in Osprey Village, where staff would like to encourage more of a apartment or stone mound style type of buildings, we would like to prohibit short-term rental because we would rather see those residential uses be used for long-term rental. Instead of, we heard stories from, actually from my friend in Halifax, where a landlord would purchase a lot of, actually the entire floor of a multi-unit dwelling and rent that out as an Airbnb, and now we have a vacuum in the middle of a downtown core. So staff is proposing that we would like to prohibit that. That doesn't help step towards our housing crisis, solving housing crisis. So we're in the high density residential zone. Again, we're suggesting that we should prohibit short-term rental.
But in the medium, we're allowing it. Is that what that...
That is correct, because it is currently allowed it, and staff is not proposing to change that at the moment.
I guess that's the piece that I probably would like to see out of there, because medium, you're talking four stories. You could still have that developer come in and buy up that whole floor in a four-story building and do exactly the same thing they do in a 10-story building. So I guess, like I said, the whole thing with Osprey Village is trying to get people into homes. And we know we have a housing market crunch right now. We have less than 1% on the market, and we're looking for affordable units and everything else in these areas. I think this will take away from what we're really trying to do, would be my comment.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Please continue, Mr. King. Minister, I'm sorry. And Chair, Councillor Staten, my apologies.
Thank you. And my experience, I was a landlord for 30-some years, so I know all about rentals. And I know if you put that, even medium density, if you put that as an option for people, that's exactly what you're going to get. And if the intent of this is to provide long-term housing for people who need housing, then that's not how you do it, because that short-term rental is going to cause you more grief. So I'd rather see it exempted than included. It's not only going to cause us grief, it's going to cause policing grief, it's going to cause neighbor grief, and probably businesses that's going to see a lot of maybe disruption of their business or looting or whatever else you get from these people that congregate. And I've seen it, I've witnessed it, and I've had a lot of complaints about it. So just as a precaution, I'd rather see it not there than there.
And yes, Mr. Makarek?
I won't proclaim to be an expert in this area, but I know the City of Toronto has been addressing this issue with downtown Toronto condominiums being rented out through Airbnb and so forth. And it has been a problem because of some bad apples and parties. But I think one of the solutions was to simply say, if this is your home, private home, and you want to rent it out for short-term rentals, you can only do so for a certain number of days a year. So otherwise, it's still a family home or someone's private home, but if they need some extra income and they want to go on vacation for 2 weeks and rent out their house to someone for a couple of weeks for tourist purposes or whatever, then they can do that. And so... again, I'm not trying to say what the solution here is, but that there are maybe ways of still permitting short-term rentals to the benefit of what might be a family home, and yet also minimizing the misuse or overuse from a rental point of view, a tourist point of view.
Thank you. Yes, Matt.
Just to this, as I have said, that the mayor's wardens are looking at trying to put some kind of Airbnb policy, something in place. The City of Charlottetown has something now that they're doing that you have to live in the home a percentage of the time in order to rent it out for the other. So it allowed for people to go to their cottage and rent their home out, whatever. There is some mechanism, but it could only be a percentage of their home. I guess... what happens if we put this through in our bylaw here and then we come back with a policy that's going to change that? Which supersedes what? because it is, like I said, one of the key items that get discussed at every mayor's wardens meeting that we have here in Lunenburg County.
Yes, thank you, Mr.
Yes. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, our Honorable Mayor, for your excellent question and feedback. So I'd like to explain why it is there currently, and then we will also like to talk about other alternative option. I actually thought of three alternative two after hearing the concern from our members. So the reason why it is written currently in the medium density residential zone is only because that wording is currently there in the existing land use bylaw since 1996. Also, those are the people who will be affected by that would be actually the 12 dwellings in on Denica Drive. And reading the planning strategy also written back in 1996, and what the intention of allowing those short-term rentals are, was that at least back in the day, the planners were thinking that all the housing development that was going to be there on the, like, it was expected to be single detached dwelling and at maximum a duplex. And considering that over 90% of our Airbnb rentals are, we're renting out the entire home. As suggested by our honorable member, it was one way for the landowners to basically supplement say like their mortgage or their income. I do see your point where if we were to sustain that clause, and once in one of the scenario where in the future where more denser use than single family dwelling, so like a multi-unit apartment comes in and it says short-term rentals are permitted, it is correct that we are opening the window to those, and maybe, and our staff agrees that that's likely not the intention of the council either. We would like to do the opposite. So in terms of alternative, staff came up with three, and please feel free to add other alternative from other staff members. So the option one would be simply, as our honorable member suggested, cross out that line. So cross out that short-term rental from the list of permitted uses in the medium-density residential zone. That's simple. That's easy. That's the advantage. The disadvantage might be that those currently living on Denica Drive, so the council is suggesting that you, unless you currently are operating an Airbnb, you are no longer permitted to rent your property for those type of uses. So there's one thing. There's option two, where we could add conditional clause. So we say short-term rental if you are one or two unit dwelling or something like that. So that, I guess the advantage is that the existing residents are not impacted, but also we're not, and the council's intention is still carried on in terms of we don't want to see a multi-unit dwelling to be mainly used for short-term rental. That's option two. Option three is, we thought of this when the Honorable Mayor commented in their mayor ward meeting, is that if in the future, if it's planned to have some type of Airbnb policy, we could do the amendment then and currently pass the document as is. So again, there's also pros and cons as well, because that there's a delay. That's the disadvantage. But the consultation with the resident have not been done, and I am not completely sure what the existing resident may think. But those are some of the options on the floor, and the committee is free to recommend any of the option or come up with another option.
And we have a question here from Mayor Bolivar Getson.
Yes. So the question that I would have is, if we delay and wait for the policy to be created, anyone that creates an Airbnb in the interim would be grandfathered after that came in place. And that would be my concern to that. And striking it out doesn't say it's allowed or not allowed, correct? Because when I look at high density, it's prohibited. taking it out of there may not do what we're intending it to do. And like I just go back to, we need housing. We need housing is what we need. And that's what we should be definitely working towards. And short-term rentals are not, they're vacation spots, destinations. And to be fair to the policy that was in place in 1996, did we even know about Airbnbs in 1996? I don't know.
Mr. King, we have two more questions, or would you like to respond first? Yes.
Yes, thank you again for your feedback. Just wanted to make one thing, one clarification. So the last line, the permitted list of permitted uses of high-density residential, so that's what's being shown on this PowerPoint slide only. In the actual proposed land use bylaw, it doesn't say short-term rental, and the current ruling in written in the, I guess, the Interpretation Act is that when a use is not listed in the list of permitted uses, it is deemed prohibited. So crossing it out would work, and then that short-term rental prohibited, that's for your information only for the committee members. That wording is not present in the actual land use bylaw.
Okay, we have another question by Councillor Oikle.
So I know that right now the medium density residential zone that we're talking about right now is R2 over where by the golf course. However, are we using these exact same terms throughout the municipality when we're starting to zone other areas? So that whatever we're talking about today, if we are, my concern is that whatever we're talking about today will apply to those areas as well. Correct? Yeah. Okay. So I think, yeah. But it's good. I'm glad that you said that this is just for our use only and that it's not in the actual bylaw. So that's good. Thank you.
Mr. Kang, did you have a response or would you?
No, I didn't. It was more of a comment and more of information. But am I correct in that saying that medium density residential zoning and high density residential zoning will be used, these exact same terms will be used for the modal 2040?
Right. Again, thanks for the question. So while that is considered and that is the draft intention of the staff, we still have a long way to go for MLGL 2040 process. So what is there on the floor right now? It may change, right, along the process when we go out to the public and listen to what people have to say. When we have discussion with the council in the future, it may have to be tweaked out. So the definition may look a little bit different in the final result. But the initial intention was that we would like to use a term that we hope to apply, hopefully elsewhere in the municipality, and this would be a pilot project. Similar initiative was done when the PAC was discussing Hanford Forest land use bylaw, where we used the zone we actually I believe 85% of the Hanford Forest is R1 zone, low density residential. And we try to come up with the policy or the zoning regulation in a way that is compatible to those rural, lakeside, cottage country type of uses. So I suppose it's a long-winded way of saying yes is correct, but the final result may change in the future.
Thank you, Mr. King. And we have a question by Mr. Hagel.
I think the intent of the medium density residential zone was to grow development here within the municipality. I think it was also to increase affordable housing. And to me, when we're talking rentals, then we're saying one thing here and we're doing the complete opposite because we're not sticking to what I thought was an agenda. And I don't understand why we're trying to accommodate in this type of environment, people who are solely focused on creating an income. Like, I thought the idea was affordable housing, was to develop the municipality, increase housing in the municipality. We're looking at changing the way we were building the municipality from single-family dwellings to now, you know, in this medium, you know, more semi-detached, detached, four units. And then yet we're talking about a complete opposite thing here of now which is rented out. And to me, I don't think that's the place for it. And I just, unfortunately, don't agree with that proposal. So anyway, I understand people have a different thought about it and want to rent their properties and stuff like that. But we're it appears like we're trying to create something else here, but yet accommodate that. And I just can't agree with it, unfortunately.
Thank you, Mr. Hagel. And Mr. McArock.
About one last comment that I wanted to make about the short-term rentals was that if the primary objective of this development is to provide affordable housing, one way of making it more affordable is allowing those people who do buy a home for their primary residence to have the ability to rent it out for a certain number of weeks every year. And I would suggest that 2 weeks, 4 weeks would probably make a big difference to a lot of people to have that extra income to help them meet their needs, while at the same time not being so extensive that it might lead to abuse. And certainly I don't think any of us would want, you know, business people coming in and buying a number of units that are just going to be rented out short-term year-round, because then you're not letting someone who needs affordable housing to have those units. The other thing, though, to keep in mind is I, not being an expert, but I very much doubt that the requirement for short-term rentals goes beyond a couple of months a year anyways. I suspect it's primarily July, August, maybe a little bit into September, where you have a large number of tourists who want to come and visit the area and would rather stay in a home than a motel. I doubt there are people traveling here this time of year. And so that's the time of the year that the person who needs an affordable home is going to be living in that home. They're not going to want to rent out and likely won't be able to rent out on a short-term basis more than a couple months a year.
Thank you, Ms. McRuck. Any other questions? Please continue, Mr. Kang.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And during the debate, this discussion will be brought back to ensure what the committee objection would be in order, and what the final recommendation will be to the municipal council. So moving forward with the other zoning regulations that are proposed to be changed include So there you go. For one of the things we're proposing is to permit more than one main buildings on a single lot. So currently, current regulations state that you have to subdivide and individual building must be on a single lot. We have seen other developments that is coming to the area. Some developers choose not to do it. They would rather have a multiple collection of dwellings on a single lot, and then it would, and the maintenance would be done collectively, as the PAC recommended in the when we discussed about the villas at Osprey Ridge, because it was a collection of 12 duplexes in one or two lots, but it would the systems like a sewer system or other those infrastructure and maintenance all together collectively by the. By an entity, and which is in which the cost is shared by the future tenant. Staff is also suggesting other zoning regulation changes, such as removing maximum height in all zones, except as we discussed in the maximum density excuse me, medium density residential zone where we have 4-story limit. Another suggestion is to remove minimum parking requirement in all zone. We will discuss that in more extensive way in the future slide. Again, increasing residentially from what is currently there is a maximum of 30 units per hectare to unlimited, with the condition that the current existing infrastructure would actually support and you would follow any other provincial regulation in terms of dense residential development. Staff has also identified new wetlands in the area that was not currently identified in the past. So staff is also proposing that we should recognize that, and then we should protect the water courses that are currently there so that the natural environment would be protected in the future.
Councillor, is it Councillor Greig? Did you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. With the wetland protection, so water courses. So how far offshore is protected with wetland protection?
Yeah. Thank you for the question. So the current proposal in which the staff is not proposing to change the water course buffer distance. So we're keeping the existing water course buffer distance of, I believe, 7 meter or 23 feet from the highest ordinary high water mark of the water course, which includes any natural body of water.
And Mr. Mackrock had a question.
Through the chair, I believe there are a number of amendments being made that it is hoped will help to lower the cost of construction per unit by the developers, with the hope that that will ultimately lead to more affordable housing. But is there a requirement by the developers to, in fact, rent out these units or sell these units at an affordable rate as per some definition by the federal government? Or is it going to be left up to the developers, who have gotten a break here, to charge whatever they think they can get? And that obviously will be to try to maximize their profit rather than trying to provide affordable housing.
I'm sorry, Mr. Kang.
Thank you for the for a suggestion. And I would love to hear this and perhaps share thoughts with our Director of Planning and Development in terms of is there a way for the municipality to, through some kind of municipal enactment, to, I guess, in some way, I'm not sure if the proper wording is a mandate the future developers to have to have certain percentage of the development as affordable or attainable. I know with the recent provincial government, which they have introduced many regulations about promoting affordable housing. Two of the news power given by the municipality is exactly that. So there's a provision where municipality may support those development that are considered affordable. And I suppose the listener, the definition of affordable or attainable housing is determined by the individual municipality. There's no set definition of it, although there are some other national criteria or other best practice definition used across Canada. But and other powers that the municipality could exercise is to say put a clause and say say, certain percentage of the unit of the total proposed developable unit must be offered at or below market price, or some kind of clause. But I would like to ask our Director of Planning and Development for his thoughts.
Yeah, thank you. So these amendments aren't mandating the affordable housing component to that. As Mr. Kang has mentioned, the province recently made some amendments where municipalities could potentially incent or, I don't know if the word's partner or contribute to a development to allow for that. But these amendments don't have any of that in there. So we're not, we're not contributing towards that. And it's not being mandated under these amendments. That would be something that, if the committee wanted us to staff to look into that as part of these amendments, that's definitely something that we could go away and dig into that and look at, like, how are other units dealing with mandating affordable housing?
I think Mr. Shoup had a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is in response to James's comment as well. Council's in the process of still developing housing policy, so we'll see some of these items come up as we work through that process as well, and that applies both to short-term rentals and to the affordability issue and the definitions that surround that. So we will see that in the near future in upcoming months, but as of yet, it hasn't been fully explored. So hopefully that's helpful, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shoup. Mr. Mackworth, did you have a response to that?
Yeah. I don't normally like to admit this, but I've spent most of my life living in Toronto. And as a result, I've had lots of exposure to developers, and I've come to the realization that certainly, at least in that part of Canada, you can't rely on developers to put in place good public planning unless they're forced to. They will always look for their own self-interests. And I think it would be naive for this group and for council to think that developers will just automatically, not only appreciate these concessions that are being made in these amendments, but then say, well, this is great, you're going to lower our costs, so we're going to make sure we provide low-cost housing. When any developer I've ever known, their objective is to charge as much as they can to maximize their profits. So if the objective of this group, and council is to provide affordable housing, I think you need to look under every rock to find a way to ensure that the developers will be required to provide at least a certain percentage of affordable housing, and to in return for some of these concessions, provide some other benefits to the community. For example, pay for a playground and playground equipment. Don't just assume that since it would be nice that there would be a playground that the developers will build one, because they probably won't unless they're required to. So I would recommend that, if you're going to go forward, as I said, with what I consider to be very generous concessions in these amendments, then make sure the developers are going to, provide something in return as a fair trade, and make sure a certain percentage of the units are going to meet the definition of affordable housing. Because otherwise, with all of the best intent of this group, you may not end up a few years from now with affordable housing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mackrock. I know there's another question. Mr. Kang, do you have a comment first, or can I proceed with the question from...
Perhaps I'll simply say that the points has been taken, and I believe that once the committee opens a debate, that point should be discussed amongst the committee members. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kang. And Councillor Staton, you had a question.
Well, I have a couple of questions, if I might. And I just want to piggyback on what Larry said, because I've been telling Council that developers develop to make money. They don't develop for anybody's convenience but their own. And I've long said that. So that's, I'll stop right there. My two questions for you is identifying wetlands in this particular area that we're zoning. Is there any wetlands that need to be identified? And my other question is about the accessory buildings. Now you can build a 10 by 10 without getting a permit. So what are you thinking of when you say permit accessory buildings without requiring a permit? Like, what size are you thinking of?
Yes, Mr. King.
Yes. Thank you. Actually, if it's okay with you, could you repeat the first question, please? Thank you.
In the area that this zoning applies to, where are the wetlands, or have you identified any wetlands that need protection?
Yes. Okay. Sorry. Thank you for the question. And so for the first question, without wetland, it has been identified. I believe it's the very last page of your report in the agenda about this item. I believe it's Schedule C significant watercourse map. You'll see some lines and area where it indicates in the map legend says wetland. So basically all those greenish area is the wetland that we have identified late last year. I do. One moment. So to answer your question, Councillor, so this light green area is the currently identified wetland as of late 2021. So, and I will highlight that if you could see the mouse pointer, that the two wetlands that's kind of surrounding this watercourse, this little brook from the pond, that has already been identified since 2006. We know it was there, and it is still there. There's some other patches of wetland that are slightly away from the water course, or I suppose the brook. Those are the newly identified wetland that was previously not identified in the original 2006 document, but as there's a consultant have, explored the lot, we have realized that there has been newly identified wetland that we have not noticed, and the suggestion from the staff that we should recognize that report, and when there's a future development comes, that the location of that when the wetland should be considered. In addition, the regulation doesn't specify that you have to stay away from the wetland, and I guess the wetland plus the 7-meter buffer. There are two or three other clauses that kind of exempt the future developer. So, for example, if on the map we identify the wetland, but next year when the development happens and something happens, so if the applicant comes back to municipal staff stating that wetland are actually not there on the field, there's an exemption clause stating that if there's a professional engineer who determines that the wetland on that map is actually not on the field, then the wetland is deemed non-existent. Therefore, we would kind of, quote, erase that non-identified wetland, and the developer could proceed with the development because, if the field research suggests that there is actually no wetland, then we shouldn't. There's no reason to prohibit that development. And there are other, and I believe there are a couple of other exemption clauses where if there's a way to get permission from the provincial Department of Environment and Climate Change, there's a wetland permit. So if you get a proper permit from the provincial government, or if you get another permit from the province to, say, properly remove the wetland, the developer could choose that option, and subject to the provincial approval, the future developer would maybe exempt from, stay away from the identified wetland in that map that we're seeing on the screen. Thank you. And there's part two to the question. Accessory building. Thank you for the reminder. So this is the clause that we copy and pasted from the land use bylaw that is currently there in the Osprey Ridge Golf Course area. So the intention is that any building that is smaller than 219 square feet, I believe that's the number. So the intention is for little shed. So if you have a house, the municipal staff is suggesting that, well, you need a permit for the main building, which is a house, but little shed or any a gazebo that I guess development close to lakeshore area, some kind of a accessible a dock, or so as long as that structure is smaller than 219 square feet, municipality is allowing that to go forward without applying for a development permit. So, and 219 square feet is quite small. We're not suggesting that you can build a garage without a permit. That's because it's garage. Typical garage would be a lot bigger than 219 feet.
Yeah. The number's 215 square feet. So that's the current requirement that you don't need a building permit if you're under that. But if you're over that, you need a building permit, whether it's accessory or not.
Is that part of the National Building Code or not?
215 square feet.
It's part of the National Building Code.
It's part of the Building Code, correct.
So what are we exempting here if that's part of the National Building Code?
Right. So the applicant may be exempt from building permit, but you still have to, in theory, get development permit. Because that's what the land use bylaw has power to. We're writing the land use bylaw in a way that is consistent with the National Building Code, that if you don't need a building permit, we're also exempting you from obtaining a development permit as well.
But the difference is, you need to have that main use, so you need to have that residential building there first.
To get the accessory.
Because it's not accessory if there's nothing to be accessory to.
And to add to that point, because one of the questions that was brought up by one of the public member back in the day is that, well, what about tiny home? Because tiny home, the definition is that any houses or any dwelling that is smaller than 400 square feet is considered tiny home. So if someone builds a 100 square feet tiny home, is that, do we don't need a permit? Well, so, and that's when the clause came in, is accessory building. You have to have main use, which is typically a house that you reside in. So we have avoided the, you know what I mean.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. King. Please continue.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. And I should have clarified at the beginning that the staff is proposing 79 amendments. Of course, we're not going 79 amendments one by one. We will be here past midnight. So the summary is that everything else is included in that slide. So because most of the 79 amendment is what's called a housekeeping amendment. So correcting a spelling mistake or a grammatical error or a punctuation mistake. Or other things as we already discussed with our honorable members, that the zoning regulation that we're proposing here is compatible with the ongoing MLDL 20 project. This is not an independent project. We would like to work together and incorporate all the feedback we're getting from, say, from the municipal council as well as the members of the public. So that's all there. So part of this plan review is that because the staff is proposing such a large scale changes to Osbury Village, we wanted to make sure if we're doing it right. So as part of this plan review, staff has conducted stakeholder engagement. So that's the list of stakeholders we have contacted. We started contacting them started late January, and I believe almost everyone got back to us. So let's quickly take a look at some of the comments that has been raised by some of our external stakeholders and internal. First one is environment. They were the first one to respond back. And one of the main things that the Department of Environment and Climate Change suggested is that there's a concern in that area about what's called acid rock drainage. And I've explained this in the public information session back in February 3rd, where it's basically when a developer digs the ground, and because of our geology, we don't really have a lot of soil, so there's a lot of rocks. The rocks in this particular area contains some metals, and once that metal containing rocks are exposed, it starts chemical reaction with water and oxygen, and what is yielded because of that is the rusted like water. And that water, so that's acid rock drainage, once it goes to any of the water courses, so for example, Lehigh River, it is devastating to any living things in that water course, especially the aquatic culture would be devastated. So the Department of Environment has warned us that thankfully there are provincial regulations to properly dispose and contain those toxic and metallic solution that may be caused from development. So the inspector just wanted to make sure that the future developer are aware that this problem exists, and just to encourage them to read the provincial guideline in properly disposing sulfide-bearing material. That was the main comment. There are other minor comments as well, stating that the erosion control and sedimentation plan before development is highly recommended. All wetlands and watercourses should be identified before the development happens, in which staff did already, so we already checked one of the boxes. The other one was transportation. We have talked to staff at provincial staff with the Nova Scotia Public Works, because one of the concerns that has been brought up by some of the members of the public was the current maximum speed on Highway 10 and Pygott Road. Currently, it is set at 70 kilometer, and imagine when high density dwellings get built and the tenants start to move in, we are expected to see lots of foot traffic, and some of those traffic would be per se crossing those major corridor of roads. Again, we're around 8 to 11,000 vehicles are traveling every single day. That's a lot of car traffic, and that typically are not compatible with the pedestrian traffic. So municipal staff has suggested the provincial staff that whether or not the province would consider lowering the maximum speed in that major corridor, the Highway 10 and Pine Gap Road, and the response from the public works is that they're actually open to the idea. One requirement that the province suggested that the municipality would have to conduct traffic impact study. So typically, a municipality would hire an engineering consultant to do all the traffic-related research. So that includes counting how many cars are traveling in the peak morning, in the afternoon, and the peak rush hour in the evening. And then also the type of vehicle that are traveling, the direction, and so on. And the province would expect to see a full traffic impact study. So having said that, the provincial traffic engineers also offered that they're happy to cooperate with this, so they would assist us and work with the, future consultant to basically do the scoping exercise together. And again, just work, collaborate in general so that the municipality could successfully complete and submit a full traffic impact study. And based on that, the province is, they're open to reducing the speed and put other traffic calming measures, which is actually coming on to the next slide. But before that, one of the other points that was brought up was the access to other services in the nearby service center. One example is Bridgewater, where there are hospitals and the recreational facility, and so on. Right now, as we all know, and as all the listeners know, it is not that safe to walk past on the overpass of the exit 12. I tried to do it. I had to give up. When there's a logging truck that's passing you by at 70 kilometers per hour. But people do it, right? I've seen people carrying groceries back, going to the overpass with two children. But people are doing it because, not because they like dangerousness, but they have no choice, typically. And we need to consider that. And the municipality is exploring those opportunities. So we're exploring options for public transit extension, hopefully, to Bridgewater. We're also talking about like a possible active transportation route over the Highway 103. Also, there's other third party or a private developer also looking for or exploring options to offer like a shuttle-like services to some of the major point in the town, especially those developers who are wishing to develop some kind of more than 100-unit type of development. So the considerations are there, and I think the municipality would further explore all of those opportunities to offer other alternate mode of transportation other than car vehicles. There's a picture I took last night, I believe. That's the family of deer I discussed. I'm pretty sure there are six of them living in that forest because they cross Nations River Road every 7 p.m. in the evening to drink water at the pond. And the reason why I brought this up is the safety, because I walk here at night, and it's very, very dark. And when I say very dark, it's pitch black. Like, you can't see a thing. So there's this concern about pedestrian safety. So one aspect we already discussed about high volume of traffic. Another safety aspect is the visibility. But in talking with the Nova Scotia Public Works, we discussed possible opportunity for installing crosswalk, traffic lights, or other type of traffic calming measure. And the municipality also has, in a recent council meeting, to discuss about installing 22 streetlight to help improve the visibility and the pedestrian safety in Osiri Village for future tenants, which is good. And finally, about the transportation, because realizing that one of the suggestions from the staff is to repeal the minimum parking space requirement, one of the concerns is that, well, what if we run out of parking spaces when there are developers suggesting 100 or 200 unit that large-scale development? So, because the major concern around that is that, well, what if those cars who are not covered by, I suppose, the off-street parking offered by the developer would spill over, quote, and then like, park on municipal road like Mason Frivol. And that's a valid concern. It is absolutely not the option. You can't park on street. And staff would like to highlight that the reason why the staff is proposing to repeal is that, so staff is not suggesting that no parking spaces are allowed. That's absolutely not the case. We're just suggesting that it is up to the market demand and the determination of the decision of the developer to assess and make a final decision on the adequate number of parking spaces that they're required in terms of their development, because that was one of the frequent concerns brought up by the developer, I think twice now, that they have specifically requested the municipal council to reduce the minimum required parking spaces because it was deemed too excessive. And it was deemed too excessive because the current regulation, like the number, the minimum number, came from a traffic study done in 1980s or 90s, and it was based on the peak demand. So like, say for example, places like those like malls, the minimum number of parking spaces was determined by the peak demand, which is 7 days before Christmas Day. And you know how that is. There's a special demand on certain days of the year, and the decision and the typical regulation, parking regulation back in before the 90s was that, well, we need to accommodate, we need to be prepared for the so-called the worst case scenario. And what we're seeing now in the market is that larger the parking lot, that it adds the cost to the developer, and eventually they pass the cost down onto the future tenant, which is not really helping the goal of promoting affordable housing. So, and what's different about Osprey Village is that we're currently exploring alternative mode of transportation. So in a rural area, of course, it makes sense that the majority of the transportation mode would be private automobile, no doubt about that. But specific for this area where we're promoting larger density, we feel confident that by the time tenants start moving in, we're in a location where it is actually, you can actually walk to, say, places like Walmart. There may be a transportation, transit option or like a shuttle option. There may be like a multi-purpose pass that people maybe use their ride on a cycle. That type of option. So staff is thinking that the traffic demand would be, I suppose, dispersed, and then so there will be less than typical amount of vehicles that we would see in the area than we typically would assume.
Mr. King, I have a question on this. I'm very hung up on parking. Again, I also lived in Toronto, and at one point, and when I lived in Halifax and in Ottawa, parking was such a big deal because they would put up new apartments and they'd have one parking spot and three guest spots, and those guest spots would be used continually, and then everyone would just park in front of your house. And then, and that would just always happen. So you'd almost have to race home from work to park in front of your own house. And it was just this, because I think the one thing that maybe isn't, I don't know if this is being considered, it's because people come to visit you. So they're coming from other places in. So, you know, although it'd be lovely if we all could walk, I mean, that's just not feasible where we are. And so that was my only concern. I know that we don't have to have excessive, but I'm afraid if we don't have the right amount, and I couldn't tell you what that is. I'm not any expert. I just know that when you don't, people just start encroaching. And the building's already built, and they don't really care. So then you're going to, the rest of the neighborhood wears it. Or they're all parking at Walmart, which maybe isn't a big deal. But maybe it is later when the area gets really popular. Anyways, I just think it's something to consider. I understand that there's a cost for parking for developers. Again, I just don't know if that savings would even come down to us, because I think that's always the first thing to go is parking. That's just my thought on that. I guess, Madam Mayor.
I guess one of the things that, and I'll refer to the town of Lunenburg, that they've just changed their zoning bylaws to, I don't even think they have parking included. Is that correct?
That is correct. They completely removed.
There's no amount of parking spots that need to be. And I guess one of the things that the municipality is working towards is some sort of public transit in this area.
to help alleviate the need for a lot of cars and families with 2 and 3 vehicle families. So hopefully the public transit piece, and I know that the housing unit that it will be here on side of us is looking at their own transit as well to move their residents back and forth. So again, what originally was in this for parking spaces is way above what you actually are going to need. It's, like I said, those peak times in residential spots aren't happening. And that's what it was based on. So it can come down somewhat. I'm not saying exclude at all. But I think developers know what they need to have and to a certain extent, especially in this area. Toronto, no, not so much. But it is definitely something that we're looking at, trying to cut down on the amount to allow more room for housing units in the area than big open parking lots.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mr. Makarook.
So through the chair, multi-level parking structures cost approximately $65,000 per parking stall. And that's why developers don't like building them, because it's a huge cost to add on to the cost of the residential unit itself. So I can understand why developers would be very receptive to the amendment to as proposed for reducing the amount of parking required. But that would then imply that this development would be perhaps better suited to people who have at most one car per family, or people who don't need to travel very far. And you don't need to travel very far if everything you need is in your development, which brings me back to the original plan, which was asking for commercial on the ground floor, I think adjacent to Highway 10 or maybe throughout. You're proposing now eliminating that because I guess developers would rather build housing units than commercial space. Be that as it may or may not, I would like there to be a reconsideration to having, at least for some significant part of this development, commercial space on the ground floor to create a mixed-use village where everything you need is there, and therefore you don't need to jump in the car all the time to drive into Bridgewater.
Thank you, Mr. Makarook. Mr. Kang.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you. I'd like to thank all of them for a really good point. So, and to add to that, the one of the original intention of this area was to be like a village. Like, so we were, where LA Champlain Drive is, that was imagined to be like a pedestrian mall where like it's actually walkable, and then you will have a commercial uses on the ground floor with like, you know, those facade, and like people would be living on an apartment above those shops. And that was in place, and that's what's still in place today. I suppose what happened is that one of the guesses is that I suppose the developer saw that as a hindrance, where maybe what the developers were looking for in the last few decades was that they were looking for housing units, and then they were worried that, well, there's a whole shopping mall right beside where it satisfies the commercial demand actually over the last 15 to 20 years. So, like, would we have commercial tenant if we were to prepare those ground floor spaces for commercial tenant and let it be vacant? And I guess we'll never know the answer, because until 2020, that this Osprey Village, it was left vacant, right? Their developers didn't arrive, and we are now seeing those demand for construction. But I guess another thing to consider that the existing business, notably, say, like Walmart, Canadian Tire, or Best Western, and Dollarama, and other franchise restaurants, they're also considering expansion, but not in the form of ground floor commercial in the currently undeveloped Osprey Village. And they are thinking of expanding within the property that they have already, so where their buildings are right now. So I guess one of the things to consider that, well, if the current demand for commercial buildings are supposedly absorbed by those, the mall that is right beside us, would there be enough demand to go around for the ground for commercial in Osprey? It is one consideration. I'm sure this is debatable, and in the end, it is up to the community members to make a decision based on like which type of lenses we look at, like what type of perspective should we need to consider, and in the end, come to the conclusion where which one's more deemed compatible with what's going on right now. So I guess in conclusion, I'd like to say thank you for the feedback. It is definitely one of the considerations that the community members should have. And I have just spoken up about from another perspective. And again, in the end, it would be up to the community members to consider if that is feasible or compatible with Osprey Village. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kang. Please continue.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll move a little bit quickly. So one of the things is the water services. So there's I don't think I need to explain too much there. Basically, the properties in red is what are serviced with central water already, and we do have a right. We do have the water rights. The purple area on the right side of the map is what's considered for or being explored for potential expansion if it's possible. The two property that is in green right now, and I'll move the mouse cursor there. That's our building right now. That's the municipal building. And this lot is that's the French school. So these two lots in green are currently not having central water access provided by the Bridgewater Public Service Commission. So one of the concerns that was brought up was that, well, we're trying to densify the area, but if we don't have access to central water or the water right, how are we supposed to support those developments? So our Office of the CAO clarified that the municipality have already applied to the Bridgewater Public Service Commission for water service access back in, I believe, July 2020, and we're doing our due diligence to continue work with them so that we would eventually obtain water service access to the remaining green area. So that's what's showing. Another component is this wastewater. So in Osprey Village, we do have independent local wastewater treatment plan in Cookeville. Currently, it's at 25% of the design capacity, which sounds enough, but the projection from the staff is that we're anticipating that demand going all the way up to 89% in the next 3-5 years when Stone Mount 1 and 2 is complete. So that is not enough to support other residential dwelling if those two buildings do go up. So the suggestion from the staff in the engineering department is that staff would like to suggest, we are currently in the budget process, would like to would request the council to consider the upgrade to the plant in Cookeville for a capital upgrade in 2024 and 2025 so that the upgrade would be completed by the time another residential development would get started. So more to that on other councils of committee. We have spoken to RCMP officers in the local area. They do not have major concern. Of course, they're policing prices based on, at least one of the factors is the number of people that they would have to serve. They just stated that they noticed the growth in the area, and eventually down in the future, they would have to get their own statistic in terms of number of residents that they would have to serve, and then and how would that impact on their level of policing services. And but also stated, also commented that that would be in the future, not but currently the police does not see any concern about public safety due to the proximity. We talked to the local fire department, and I would like to thank the fire chief, Chief Darren Mulock, for working closely with the municipal staff to find a solution to protect the, I suppose, the new type of development, so especially those multi-unit dwellings, because those are the type of the development that we haven't really seen in the area, so our firefighters would need to be prepared. In response, because some of the challenges that firefighting for the fire suppression ability for buildings over four-story, because if it's over a certain house, like, do we need other type of equipment? The response was that under the National Building Code, if the building is over four or more story, actually it's three or more story, a sprinkler system is mandatory, and the standpipe is also mandatory to be placed, so that instead of our volunteer firefighter dragging the hose from, you know, through the front gate and go all the way to the floor, they would simply just bring the hose, connect to the standpipe and the floor that is affected by fire, connect to it to the, and with the support of the pressure from the sprinkler system, they would, it would be a lot easier for our firefighters to suppress fire. So that has already been addressed in the National Building Code. Fire service also mentioned about it would be nice to have adequate fire flow, and in case there's a failure in the central water system, it would be nice to have like a backup static water source. And that has been considered, because the central water system that is in place right now already accounted for the fire flow in case of a major event. And when the PAC discussed about the stone mound development, we talked a lot about the pond there, like, and the reason but why the staff suggests that we should leave the pond is that our firefighters used it, and there was a history, I can't remember which year, but they have, when there's a large fire around the forest back in Cookeville, they use that pond as a source of a static water source, and then because it's a natural spring, like there, it is actually, that pond is actually quite capable of, you know, supplying firefighters with enough water. So and that is still there in place. And when we discussed with the developer of the stone mound during the site plan process, we wanted to make, because one of the recommendations from the fire department back then was that, is it possible to put some kind of a pavement, or so anyway, like make it accessible for the fire truck or apparatus to go as close as possible to the pond so they can refill easily, and that has been taken into consideration. So that will make things a lot easier for fire suppression services in this area, which is good. The comment that we recognize that there's a limited number of fire service personnel in our municipality, but the comment we received is that the local fire department here in Northfield, they do have currently stated that they have currently have a strong department, and there are mutual agreement in place that the nearby fire department would come to assist, so including the town, Day Spring, and other areas as well. And one of the conversation with this with the staff was that, well, if there's going to be that many residents coming in, hopefully few of them would assist the local fire department as a volunteer activity. That's one of the comments. There was just three. So, and I would like to highlight one more thing. So the chief stated that the Northfield Fire Department, they have already started training using the standpipe that would be in place for multi-unit dwelling. So the chief stated that by the time the buildings are up, our fire service personnel would be more than ready to serve the area. So I'd like to thank, again, our local fire chief for his foresight. We have spoken to the EHS personnel. They also did not have any concern. Major concern about the development that is proposed. They also stated that they would monitor the situation closely, as a lot of the new resident that would be coming to the area would be perhaps be a senior population, so they're watching closely in that. And then once the tenant starts moving in, and they would talk about some of the whether or not they need to alter their level of services. There's another component of like access to services, access to other job or recreational activity. I guess the short way of saying it is that we staff believe that there's sufficient the number of jobs and the recreational amenity nearby the hospitality. So we think this is adequate in terms of both residential and the number of job, and the expected number of job would be given after the possible expansion of the existing business that is already in place in Osprey Village. And finally, there's regulation named Statements of Provincial Interest, where the province mandates municipality to must include housing policies to address affordable housing, special needs housing, rental accommodation, and should consider things like enabling higher density, encouraging maximum use of existing infrastructure. And staff would just like to comment that we have considered all those points mentioned by the province, and this plan review is actually encouraging the recommendation suggested by the province, which is good. Public engagement has been conducted on February 3rd. I believe on that night we got 423 views and 32 comments out that night, which I believe that was the record response. There was also high volume of requests for follow-up, so those people who could not watch it live in person requested that they would have like a copy of the slide or things like that. So it was good to know that there's a high interest amongst our resident in the municipality. And this is where I would pass the mic to my colleague, Darren Shoup, to talk just a little bit briefly about what we heard from our municipal resident. So, Darren.
Happy to give Pyeongjin a little break after a couple hours worth. I would note that we did have a question about an hour and 45 minutes ago from one of our Facebook viewers. So if Paula is still there, perhaps, Madam Chair, we could address that question now.
Yes, please.
It ties into what I'd be talking about anyway, so it's perfect. Sorry, let me pull it up. Paula, and we touched on it earlier, but Paula asked, where would the attainable and affordable rental housing be? So I think that speaks to two points. Basically, what we've been looking at would be permitted to be developed in this area, and that's what we're doing through these zoning designations that we've been looking at. And the other side of that is what would be encouraged to be built in this area as well. So what measures would council take to ensure that we're meeting an affordable threshold of some sort that would be attainable to all our residents and not a certain segment? So it's a great question, and thank you very much, Paul. And again, thank you for being patient if you're still there. I don't have an answer for it necessarily, but it's something that we're looking at, keeping in mind, as I mentioned earlier, that council would be looking at housing policy and, again, looking to make sure that all residents, regardless of income, have a place to live in this area. So appreciate the question. And that's the only one that we had for now, unless I missed one, which is always possible. But if I do, I'll try to pick it up at the end here. So to touch on the slides that we had up here from last year at this time, we had the community goal survey, which was being circulated for took about 3 months. And we had specific housing questions that we looked at. And without going into too great a detail on this, our residents did reaffirm the fact that we did have some housing issues that we need to look at, and they wanted to make sure the council was aware of them. In all of the areas that we've been talking about already, I mean, in terms of affordability, some of the seniors, independent and assisted living, that we're looking to develop in this area. Those have already been looked at. If you skip along to the next slide there, please. Thank you. And so this gave the basis when we heard from the public last year about how what we could consider in our housing policy as we go forward, and again how the committee might want to interpret these policy amendments that we're looking at now. In fact, so again, I won't go through every bullet point on there, but it's good information that we heard at the time, and it's well worth considering now. Jump ahead one more time. So were you picking it up on next steps? Was that enough of a break?
Thank you for the assist. So the next step, should the PAC would make a recommendation to move forward with this plan review, what you see on the screen is the proposed date. So if a motion is passed tonight, a public hearing would be expected to happen around April 5th, and which then on the same day, council would likely conduct second reading. And so to Madam Chair and all the members of the committee, I would like to thank you for your patience, because this is a very extensive topic. I would be happy to take any questions and comment, then move on to the debate where we have left it. So back to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, first of all, Byung-jin, for your very thorough proposal, and it's obviously, a lot of work was put into it. Considering the time of evening, I would like to ask the members if they would like to debate this tonight, or if we should put it forward to another meeting time.
Well, I think that we.
Councilor Oracle.
Oh, thank you. I think we've really talked about it a lot already, just throughout, that we've really debated it a lot. So I don't know if we necessarily need to put it forth to another time. If there's any other question, I don't know. But I feel we've already really exhausted it.
Thank you.
I'm exhausted anyway.
Thank you. And Mayor Bolivar-Getson.
Thank you. It is getting late. I believe there was two main areas with the parking maybe and the Airbnb that you're looking for direction on. Is that correct? Was there something else in there that...
Yeah, I think there was one more. Yes,
I can take it? That one. So I did highlight a couple notes. Okay. So I have, should we prohibit short-term rentals in the medium density zone? The other one, should we require affordable housing? So going back to James's question. And the third one I had is, should we require commercial space on the ground floor? Those were the three that I had highlighted. If there was any others that...
Yes, and yes, Mr. Macrock.
Yeah, there was one other I mentioned, although it certainly wasn't a focus, and that was with all of these, you know, amendments, I would think we should be able to get something back in return in addition to what Jeff just mentioned. And the one thing that came to my mind that I would like considered is having developers provide space for a playground and pay for the playground equipment, which would be minor compared to the savings of, for example, not having to produce so many parking spaces, because right now we're suggesting there's no minimum number of parking spaces, as just one of the amendments that have been made in favor of reducing the cost of construction per unit.
Oh, yes.
Just in relation to that, in if it's a developer in the pink zone where the houses are and they want to develop a pile of houses, I know that in Calgary that developers who build a lot of houses in those areas, that they do put in green, like in the R3 areas. Like if somebody wanted to come in and build a pile of homes in that area and then sell them, that I know in Calgary that they do put in playgrounds, and developers put in the playgrounds within that area. So that would not be an unreasonable thing that hasn't happened through Canada and other places. Just is in support of that.
And thank you. And Mayor Bolivar-Gatson.
And I guess one of the things here with the development that's happening next to us, they are looking at some recreational opportunities and some dollars coming from developers to help offset the costs of some of those things. We do have a playground not far from here, and I'm not sure. I know that with the stone mount, they're proposing recreation opportunities, swimming pools, whatever, within their units that they're building. So there will be some recreation component to that that the developers are already looking at. I'm not sure within our subdivision bylaw plan what the offset is for this right now. At one point, a developer had to give so much land, but what has happened in the past is that the municipality of the District of Lunenburg has a lot of dots or spots on their map that every time a subdivision was created, there was a parcel of land that was given to the municipality. And way back when this was given to us, there wasn't a real criteria around the type of land that you received. So that, yes, we have a lot of wetlands, and we need wetlands as well. But it wasn't developable land, a lot of it. So there's, right now we're trying to evaluate all of our dot matrix recreation maps with the land that we do have and looking at what needs are really in the area, but looking at it more globally than for one specific area.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And did you have a comment first?
Yeah, just to the mayor's point. So currently under our subdivision bylaws, when lots get created, there is a 2% cash-only public open space contribution. So we're taking that at the time of subdivision, and that under the Municipal Government Act, it can only be used for recreational purposes. It can't be like pay a staff person's wage or anything like it. So it's accounted for separately in the municipal budget.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. And Councillor Oikle.
I was just going to say that that with these areas, sometimes in order for the houses to sell, the contractors need to have a playground or whatever for people. Sometimes they do put that in automatically in their areas for, and that we wouldn't necessarily need to put it in policy that they do so, I think.
Thank you very much. Any other comments? So I guess we're saying that we would like to continue with this tonight then, and advice postponing for another meeting, if I understand this correctly, from Councillor Oikle's comments. Are we all in agreement on that? Okay.
We have okay. Some people that have quite a ways to travel.
I yes.
Make this a midnight for them.
I understood. Understood.
Yeah. Maybe if the committee wants to take, so we had four, then we just talked about the one. Do you want to talk about the, you know, should you prohibit short-term rentals in the medium density zone? And there was a lot of discussion about that, but committee hasn't come to a consensus or anything on that. Like, do you want to work through that topic?
Yes, Councillor Greek.
I agree with the comments that were said that we're trying to solve the issue of housing, and I would lean toward the side of prohibiting short-term rentals in this area in the medium density, because our goal is to eliminate the housing crisis or help the housing crisis?
Thank you, Councillor Greek and Mr. Makaruk.
So I think we're probably in agreement that we want to prevent some entrepreneur from buying up one or more units solely for renting out for short-term rentals, because that does then prevent a family from having an affordable home. But I think it would be a good idea to say that if it's your primary home, you should be permitted to rent it out for up to X number of weeks, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, a year, because I think for a lot of people that would be something that would help them to be able to afford this unit. And yet I don't think it would be something that would lead to some of the problems that maybe happen elsewhere, because this is their primary home. They're not going to be renting out their primary home for parties. They're not going to be renting out their primary home for groups that are going to misuse and create problems for the other neighbors.
Thank you very much, Ms. Makaruk. I guess my concern on that is, how do we control that? If we said it was 2 weeks a year or 4 weeks a year, how would I know that? I don't think we would. And that's my only personal concern. Yes, Councillor Oikle.
I do agree with James, James, on that allowing people to be able to rent their home out for 2 weeks, like people do home swaps, right? We have my aunt, for example, she rents out her home in Blue Rocks to people that are doing films, and she lives at her cottage in the summer, right? So there are people that do those things, but I also agree that they shouldn't be just bought to rent out for short-term rentals, and that the person that owns the home isn't even here, that they live in Budapest, I don't know, right? But that they need to at least live here.
Yes.
Yeah. And to the chair, to answer your question about, well, how would we, you know, govern or manage that? I think you would find that the neighbors would all know if a unit is being rented out, you know, 6 months of the year versus 2 or 4 weeks, or, you know, the neighbors know, especially in a high density environment, they know what's going on and they can refer to, you know, the bylaws or whatever, and appropriate action would take place to prevent the misuse of the rental.
Yes, Councillor Statton.
Oh, how I wish that were true. We do not have a bylaw for nuisance and noise. Actually, I have a piece of paper here that hopefully will instigate that again. We do not have such a bylaw. I can only tell you what my experience is in that what the lake people are going through and what the high-density areas of Pine Grove are going through, because people may go to their cottage for the summer and rent their houses full-time every weekend. And it's a nightmare for the neighbors. It's a great income for the people who own a cottage. They own a cottage, so they're not really in need of a lot of money, but they still use that as a way to make money by renting their regular home out to weekend. It could be not just summer. It could be March break. It could be any time of the year, Christmas time. You know, it's a real problem in my district, and I don't know if the other councils are having the problem or not. I know in my district it's a real problem. The RCMP won't respond because we do not have a bylaw that they can lay charges for. And they're very hesitant to go out and break up a party unless it's alcohol or drugs involved or fighting. So when you say yes, that may be a little bit of income for some people, but if they have a cottage they can go to, they may not be in that much of a need of the income, but the people that need housing – and put up with that kind of noise, it's a problem for them. So that's why I'm saying I think that short-term rental should be just deleted. If someone takes a chance and rents the home on a short-term basis, hey, who's gonna know and who's going to report them unless there is a problem?
Thank you very much, Councillor Staton. And it does seem that the short-term rental, if there was a... Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Hay. I guess I was just thinking that if we did have a bylaw, we could point to it, but we don't. So I guess that's kind of what's putting us in this quandary.
I agree 1,000% with Councillor Staton on this, and I brought it up here before. I feel personally short-term rentals benefit a few, cause a lot of grief to many more than the few that are benefited. And unfortunately, it's something that nothing can be done about. And if you live in a residential zone, you live in a residential zone. If you want to live in an area that is in a rental zone, that's something different. But unfortunately, these are problems that are being created now. And they're being created in areas that this problem never existed before. I know one landowner that just bought a piece of property up in Big Mushmush and plans to turn it into 3 B&Bs on the same piece of property. And I just thought to myself when I heard that, wouldn't you love to be his neighbor now, right, that he's going to create this? So maybe he'll apply for permits and he'll create his little buildings and he'll have small little units down by the beach, right, and he'll have 3 different people in. But imagine the conflict that that's causing for the adjoining property owners that might have lived there for how many years? And I'm just, this short-term rental thing, I just don't personally agree with it. I think there's a place for rentals, and I wish, unfortunately, the municipality had zoning in these areas, but most of our municipality is not zoned. So it's uncontrolled, and to me, this is just like adding to it again. And it's adding to it, from what I understand here, in a fairly high-density residential zone. And it's bad enough when it's in a lake area, but now we're talking about putting houses closer together so that we can maximize what we can get out of the property because of the cost of development. And I just see the problem being worse, so... I'm just not in favor of it, and I agree 100% with the councillor.
And I would say we take it out of this one here. Just remove it from the...
Thank you very much for your comments. I was just checking about what our alternatives would be for this motion. I guess one would be approve the proposed review with conditions. And so that would be a condition that we could take that out. Yes.
Just one other thing, and Jeff would understand it. I believe when we did the Hempford Forest zoning there, that this was an issue there, and they addressed it, I believe, over there. And I know this probably can't be done here, but you can only have a short-term rental on your property if you live within the same subdivision, wasn't it, Jeff? There was some words around it that they tried to address it that, you know, and it just complicates it trying to address each little part of this, right? But anyway, this come up here before especially the Hempford Forest when I remember it was quite a debate.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering that, too. Is it an actual vote that we do? Or just consensus? Just go through? Okay, so...
Should we prohibit short-term rentals in the medium density zone?
Yeah, so should we prohibit short-term rentals in a medium density residential zone? So I just...
After hearing more of the conversation, I'm saying yes as well.
And I'm yes.
Yes.
No.
And then we have our two members on Teams.
Yeah, currently can't see them, but if they want to speak up.
It's okay, I can hear you. I say yes.
Hi, it's Kathleen. I just want to clarify the query is that we allow or that we... Just because somebody's
So we're saying that not to allow it.
To not allow.
Yeah.
So I'm going to disagree with that one.
Okay. And my own would be that I'd say yes, that we should take out the term short-term rentals from the medium-density residential zone. Yes.
Not to be picky, but unfortunately, the mayor's vote doesn't count.
No.
That you know for counting.
Thank you. I wish I was better prepared. I'm sorry.
So on that one, you didn't come to a consensus on that?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, and I'm sorry, I missed Councillor DeLong.
6 to 2,
yeah. Thank you.
So does it have to be 100%?
No.
No. So majority, am I understanding that correct?
Yeah. So it sounds like we can make that strike out the short-term rentals in the medium density zone. The other one question was, should we require affordable housing in the developments?
I'd like to speak to that.
Yes, Mayor Bolivar, yes.
As much as we would like to have affordable housing in some of these, we've actually... With the development that's currently going on side of us here, they were denied affordable housing units. It's not always approved by the CMHC. So it's a hard thing to say you must require to have because you can be denied.
Okay, thank you. And Councillor Stanton.
And I think there's definitions of subsidized, affordable, and low income. You have a definition for each one, and they're all different. And I do believe there's some subsidized housing in one of the buildings that's going up right next door to us. But the definition of what they are is completely different, so you have to watch what you're asking for.
Yes, Mr. Mackrock.
Yeah, I said this before, but just to remind everyone, in my opinion, a number of amendments are being made that will significantly lower the cost of construction per unit. And that's a big concession to the developers. And I think there needs to be a way to ensure that those savings get passed on to the renter or the homeowner. Otherwise, what is likely to happen is the developer is going to say, thank you, I'm going to make now more money per unit. My profits are going up. And that's not what we're trying to do here. So there needs to be some creative way to ensure that these savings by lowering the cost per unit because of all of these 78 amendments will be carried through to the homeowner or renter.
Yes, Councillor O'Connor.
I'm not sure which particular amendments you're thinking would help a contractor build a cheaper building. I'm not sure. Perhaps, Mr. King, you could specify which ones would that be. I'm not really sure which ones it would be. Because I'm not seeing that this is about that. This is more about allowing certain buildings to be built in certain areas, businesses being built in certain areas, rather than allowing contractors to build cheaper buildings or to save money.
Mr. Kang?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you for your question to our honorable community members. So, so that's something that a new provision or new clause, or I guess one additional amendment would be required, and because of the, lack of background research, if this is the consensus of the community to include that clause, staff would have to come back, do more research, and come back with an amendment because that would be something that staff would not be able to propose a finished wording of the legal provision in the bylaw right at this moment.
I don't think you understood my question. So James said that because of these amendments that we're making, we're helping, if I'm getting that correct, we're helping the developers to make extra money. And so he feels that they should have affordable housing in there because of what we're doing here today. Is that correct, James, is what you were saying?
Yes, except I would put it a little differently. Yeah. I would say that a number of these amendments are helping to lower the cost of construction per unit, and therefore those savings need to be passed on to the home owner or renter through some creative mechanism. Otherwise, my fear is that the developer will pocket these savings and be very grateful.
So I'm asking Mr. Kang if he, or perhaps James, you can specify which of these things is going to do that, because I'm not seeing any of these things that we're talking about doing that. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mr. Merrill.
So I think where Councillor Oracle's getting at is, so if we reduce or remove the parking requirement, so to build the park to the parking standard that's there today, it costs money to put gravel down, pave it, line it, and maintain that. But if you reduce that, so there'd be less parking that they would have to build. So that would be a savings, right? Like, so you no longer have to build a maximum that might be too much for the development. And again, we're not saying that you wouldn't have any parking. It would be left to the developer to decide, for their market, how much parking do they actually need, instead of us specifying a number, which the trend is that we've been specifying too much parking because it's based on the worst, the maximum demand. So if you can reduce things like that, if you can reduce the number of parking that's mandated, that will have savings because they don't have to build as much parking. There could be other things like the height of the structure, but I don't know. I guess I don't know enough about the savings by allowing them to go higher up, to basically be able to build more units by going up versus more units being spread out, right? Because you only have so much land, but if you can go up higher, you might have the cost per unit might be. You might have a savings there, but I can't comment on what that would be.
Thank you. I also wondered if maybe what the team was thinking of was what was really appealing to try to get development to come here. So while we were both saying, hey, the developer seems to be getting a lot of stuff here, I think we're also trying to attract developers to come to Bridgewater and to develop in this area. And so I think maybe that's where our balance problem is here. We want people to come here. We want to get rid of some red tape and get rid of people putting little gazebos in their backyard, having to ask for permission for that. I get, so we're trying to cut some red tape, save some money, but on the same time, we do still need to have, you know, there's still a high demand for affordable housing, and how do we guarantee that by? So I don't know if, I wish I had an answer on that, but I don't. I don't know if there's an incentive program or anything, or that just seems very sophisticated, but probably doable.
I just can add to that, the less footprint means the less land they have to buy. The higher they go, the cheaper the land. And the more units, if there's less parking, the more units they can supply. So, yes, there is a benefit to a developer to have less regulations to put their buildings up. And everybody will tell you that. Anybody that's building, the less restrictions I have, the less expensive it is for me to build.
Is there something that... I'm sorry, go ahead. Please, Mr. Hagel.
I understand the concern. I just don't know how you'd ever address it. You know, I'm kind of on a part of me, and not to sound delirious here, but if you have single-family dwellings and they occupy a single lot, and in today's market, if that house is worth $400,000, you know, I would like to think that if we built four units on that same lot, I'm not going to say they're $100,000 units, but as well, the developer can't sell that for $400,000 as well. So I don't know, you know, to think that that's going to get looked after by itself, I understand your concern, and what developers are going to get the maximum amount that they can get for properties, but still with this type of development, there's only a resale value for it at a certain cost. And I don't know if that's the answer to this. Like, it's not an answer, but I don't know how we could ever control it, to be honest with you. But I do understand concern, and I respect what you're trying to get across here. I just don't know how we'd ever place it, right?
Thank you, Mr. Hagel. Mr. McElrock.
So through the chair to be June or to Jeff or, well, to staff in general, I guess, you know, you're the experts. I would think that, you know, certain, probably the larger urban municipalities in Canada, they have found a model to use to ensure that developers are, in fact, building affordable homes that meet the criteria of the definition of an affordable home, rather than just leaving it up to the developers to charge what they think, you know, they can get. So is there not a model being used somewhere? You know, probably at least Toronto, if not Halifax.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes, there is a model. Actually, the closest model we have is the Halifax Regional Municipality. So under our, the Municipal Government Act, there are clauses that saying that in the land use bylaw, municipal council can exercise power such as, I guess the legal term is the inclusionary zoning, where, you know, an example that's in Halifax, currently in the center plan, so the urban core area, is that if you're building a certain number of multi-unit dwelling development, you know, at least 10% has to be, you know, operated lower than the market price. So it is possible the municipality does have such authority. Council can do it if wanted. There's also a clause for bonus density zoning. So what you alluded to. So say if the the maximum height would be 4-story, but if developer would offer some amenity back to the municipality, and that amenity being whatever the municipal council would define, such as a bicycle parking, some kind of art and cultural pieces, or something like offering some kind of a transit shelter, you name it. And then if the developer would offer those type of amenity that the council would like to see in that area, council does have power to offer or relax, I guess, the maximum density regulation. So you're now at 4-story, but since you're offering us 100 bicycle parking spaces, we are happy to give you up to 6-story. So something like that. It is in place in HRM. Having said that, I guess another perspective is that in an urban area where it's quite competitive to have, like, a, you know, in terms of real estate, where developers are looking for, you know, the prime real estate, it makes sense. It works because we're making, the municipality can make developers to do something for the public good in compensation for their, I guess, private gain in terms of, like, their density being increased. In a rural municipality, what typically happens is that, so if our municipal council would say similar thing, say, yeah, so the maximum height of 4-story, but if you were to give us, if you were to offer, say, 50 unit that is offered at an affordable rent, our typical response from our local developer would say, okay, well, I'll go over to the other municipality. See you later. And we won't see that development happening. That's still another scenario, but I'm just giving the comments of other perspective.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kang. I do think that that's part of it, is that we're not, unfortunately, a premium area. We're just more rural, so we have lots of space. So, I personally very sympathetic to what you're saying, because I get it, and that's what I thought. Can we do an incentivization of some sort that, you know, you do? So there's two things. Then you'd have to decide what is affordable housing, yeah, right? And then how long is that going to last? Because I know in Halifax there's discussions on this too. Is it for 10 years? Is it for 20 years? And does that? And then it goes into, then everyone's priced back out, and then you have the same problem again. So I think it's pretty, it's a pretty complex question. And we have to still try to attract people to develop here. Mr. Mackler.
So through the chair, this is, I think, a critical issue, and perhaps not one that we can fully resolve tonight. Maybe we need staff to come back with a recommendation. That would be my recommendation. But I think if we just leave it the way it is right now, I firmly believe that you probably will get lots of developers wanting to build, because these amendments are going to be very enticing to developers. I mean, just to repeat a couple of them, there's no maximum height, no maximum density, no minimum parking spaces. I mean, these are all gifts to developers. So some developers are going to jump and build. Great. But if your objective is to build affordable homes, that objective may not be met. You may end up having a lot of homes built that are catering to the wrong demographic group. The other thing is, whatever is built is going to be there for 80, 100 years, perhaps longer. So you want to make sure that what's going to be built is built right and is going to be a complement to the community, and one that's not going to, eventually turn into something that people are not going to want to look at, yet alone live. And having lived in Toronto, I've seen lots of examples of that, where developers have come in and built something cheap, and it ends up being a bit of a slum 10 years later.
Thank you, Mr. Mackrook. So we've had lots of discussion here.
Do you want to go around the table on this? I guess the question is, does the committee need staff to come back with more information to look in how would the municipality require affordable housing? Or so your option is ask us to go look for more. You can go as presented, so not require affordable housing. So I guess what's the committee's wishes?
Okay, and just to be clear too, so I do think that, just so that nothing gets taken out of context, I do think everybody wants affordable housing. I think it's just how to go about doing it. And so I think some people are thinking that if you put up apartment, if we do this, people will come and build, and by the market, it will come. Right? So I think that's kind of what some people are thinking. Other people are like, well, you're not going to get that if you don't force it. So my question is, do you guys need to go back and do more research on this, is what we're asking everybody. Okay. Let's start with Mr. Yes.
Would it be helpful if I put forth a motion to that effect and then we just vote on it, or maybe that's in essence what you're doing here?
I don't think we're at that stage yet. Is that correct? Do I understand that? Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, you don't have to do a motion at this point.
Yeah.
You can go around the table and see where everybody's at, and then you can do your motion at the end, like if you're ready to do a recommendation. Yeah. But, you know, if the committee wishes, I mean, you can do a motion on an item.
So I guess the municipality has been working very closely with developers to get affordable housing units on our land here. As I said before, they all will not be approved in what we're doing. But we have sold land here as well. And the land that we have sold, I assume, will be grandfathered before this is in place, because they've already got their plan and they're moving forward on side of us. So I'm not sure how, I guess I'm not prepared to halt the development that we've already approved if it doesn't have that affordable housing concept to it, because I know that they've tried. So.
Yeah, so there is the existing next door that we've already approved permits for. So, yeah, that one goes ahead, and it fits within the zoning as well. Yeah, but it would apply to other developments coming along. It would have to meet the requirements of the zone.
Yes, so
if a company is willing to put in affordable housing, but we're denied, it won't matter. Really, we can't put it in a policy because we can't make the province put accept affordable housing in a for example, that builder wanted to have affordable housing, but they were denied. So does that mean they shouldn't build here because they didn't? Their application wasn't accepted, even though they were willing. So I don't think it's something that we can actually put in our zoning requirements, because we have no control over whether somebody's going to be accepted or not by higher authority than us to be able to put in affordable housing, as was an example that the mayor has just mentioned. So I think it needs to be dropped personally.
Thank you, Councillor Oracle. I think it would kind of make sense if we just go kind of around the room again, just to get a feel where everybody's standing here. Mr. Hagel?
I feel like a couple of things. I wish I had a little bit more direction on what the expectation of council was on this development. I'm not sure I quite understand that. As well, there's a part of me that thinks I would like to explore or have staff come back with other alternatives here to see if we could make this right rather than just pushing it through. So,
thank you. Councillor Oracle.
As I said, even though having affordable housing is what we all want, if a company like the one that is building here and did apply to have affordable housing but were denied to be able to have affordable housing, then I think that it's actually another level of government needs to address this and get some policies in place for our province, for our area, and a higher than us. I don't think we should be putting it in there, because we can't control it.
Thank you, Councillor Oracle. I'm sorry, Councillor Statton.
Yeah. The market will determine what the developers charge for their properties. If we put clauses in there that they have to give so many units or provide so many units with affordable housing, then the municipality needs to be prepared to put some money on the table, because the developers who go for their financing are not prepared to, or CMHC where they get it, may say, no, you're not eligible, or there's lots of reasons why they may be turned down. So if we have a clause there that they have to provide so many units, then we need to be prepared to put some money in them. And that's my opinion from, like I say, being in the marketplace for many, many years and knowing that you don't put these buildings up to give them away. You put them up to make a profit over a long period of time, or 10, 15 years. And unless we as a municipality are willing to throw some money in the pot, it's not going to happen. We're lucky to get the housing and to get the concessions that we have gotten from the people that are coming to do this. We have some, I don't know if it's affordable or subsidized, I think it's subsidized housing that they're using as a description. And we are very lucky that it is included in the developments that we're getting. And whether that'll keep happening or not is according to how many concessions we as a municipality are willing to give them.
Thank you, Councillor Stan. Councillor Greek.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to see an affordable piece put in development, but if we aren't the government body to make those decisions on who is approved for affordable housing, then I don't see how we could make that a requirement. Yeah, so I'd like to explore the other options, whatever else is out there. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Makarok.
Sophisticated developers will build what will maximize their profit per unit. And if the objective of council is to have at least a certain percentage of these units described as affordable, then I think the best thing to do is to have staff, who we all hold in high regard, go back to the drawing board and put their heads together and think about creative ways that we can put in place a mechanism that will ensure a certain percentage of the units are affordable and meet local needs that way. Especially given, as I said earlier, I think all of these amendments, which are helping drive down the cost of each unit, let's make sure that those savings don't end up in the developers' pockets. They need to be passed on to some of the renters and homeowners.
Thank you, Mr. Makarok. And then we have Councillor DeLong online.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to sit on the fence on this one. I would hate to send staff back to the drawing board, as it were, given how much work I know they've already put into this. I definitely support housing initiatives, particularly affordable. Is inclusionary zoning something that would benefit our municipality? I guess I'd like to ask staff that through the chair, if I may.
Yeah, I think. Can you repeat your question again, please? Thank you.
Oh, my apologies. Can you hear me at all?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay. Through the chair, if I may, I'd like to ask staff if they think inclusionary zoning is something that would benefit our municipality.
That's what we're talking about.
Through the chair. Thank you, Councillor DeLong. That's what we were just sidetracked with as you were asking.
No, I know, but sorry, carry on.
So it's Byung-jin, you mentioned that something we haven't had a chance to look at yet, because it may become part of something council's larger policy direction on housing as a whole. So in this particular instance, where we were looking at amendments for Osprey Village, it wasn't included in the consideration right now, because again, it was going to be looked at a larger scale. That's not to be said that it couldn't be looked at right now, and then brought back at the greater discussion as well. So that is a consideration we can take into account now.
So, and if I may, Madam Chair, so thank you. So to add to that, so while staff acknowledge the importance of having affordable housing and making sure that the saved money goes to the right, for the right people and for the public good. So this use of the new provision we got from the province for inclusion zoning, bonus density, all that new power that the municipality has in order to promote affordable housing here, the intention of the staff was to look at it as part of the MODL 2040 projects, because there's going to be several workshops on housing and just the land use in general in our municipality, in which the PAC would definitely be involved in this larger conversation throughout the year. That's why we purposely not stated in this particular plan review, talking about inclusion zoning and affordable housing was definitely, we thought we would save it for when we have a longer time for, like, this is a few months, well, several months discussion we need to explore more extensively. That's why we thought we would have that as a separate discussion of the council and the PAC and the public.
Yes.
But it was considered, so yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And Councillor, and Kathleen Longgray, please.
Hi, sorry to be the last lonely voice on the end here. I echo the concerns and some of the points that have been made. Definitely, I don't think that we need to concern ourselves with developers not wanting to develop here. As we see from our census numbers and all of the charts, our population is definitely at a place where we need additional housing. And yes, I know that we do need that affordable housing. So that comes up very loud and clear through all the conversations we've had here. I think that that is more of a policy statement, that there should be principles behind trying to work with all of the decision makers, particularly those who have the money behind it to promote and to achieve a certain level. So those are aspirational goals where we need to increase our affordable housing quotient by N number, by N date, and that then becomes a creative challenge for development going forward. And I don't think we need to be worried per se about having to sell Bridgewater or Lunenburg, Lunenburg municipality as a place where development will want to happen, because I think that's going to happen. And I very much echo that developers will make money. And I think perhaps if we take a look at some of that profit structure, if there's savings that we're helping with some of the decisions that we're making along these lines, that savings can be turned into some subsidized or funded units that would be potentially less cost. So whatever the percentage of, let's say it's 300 units, then maybe 10% of those units or 5% of those units or 2% of those units, whatever, can be sold at however much percentage below market value. Anyway, there's a calculation that's there. I'm sure that there's some consultation that needs to happen with CMHC as well as the province. I hear what you're saying, Byung-jun, about 2040. I think that that's a critical conversation, and I don't think we can have that in even two sessions. This is going to take a long time. For this particular piece, I don't want to hold it up either, but I do have some concerns. I'm concerned that we're taking out short-term rentals. I'm concerned that we're aspirationally talking about affordable housing, but we're sort of feeling like our hands are tied and we don't really have anything that we can do about it. And I, too, am reluctant to send our hardworking staff back to the drawing board to say, come up with something else. That said, and we certainly don't want to say no to development that's already halfway in process. But this is a really good opportunity for us to say, okay, here's some of the art of the possible. So I'm not really sure if there's a midpoint there, and feel free to weigh in, Darren and Byung-jun, about what what other pieces could come back. I take a look at the goal around having this approved. It's a relatively fast timeline. Given the amount of conversation we've had about this tonight, I don't know that that timeline is achievable, because I think we need to have a couple more answers to some of the pieces we've talked about. So, again, not to sit on the fence, but I'd like to have perhaps a recommendation back that might address some of the concerns that we've echoed tonight, and then have a vote going forward, maybe not tonight. I'm concerned that we're tired. We've had a lot to think about, and I'm not particularly comfortable giving a yay or nay to this just now.
Thank you very much, Ms. Long-Gray. Mr. Kang, did you have a response?
Yes, thank you. So I guess what I'm hearing from the committee is that I feel that there is a consensus saying that we should do something about affordable housing, a step further, and then perhaps the Mr. Merrill, please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if PAC can direct staff to explore options for promoting affordable housing in the municipality, such as the inclusion zoning, affordable housing, cash in lieu, and bonus density, and other power that the council may exercise through the... I drew up a motion to be helpful. Because the... Oh, and we should discuss the first one. So what's not in bold was the original motion, and if the consensus is to remove the short-term rental or no longer allowing it in the medium density residential zone, you would also say the what's bolded, that's the there's a changes, because the clause 831C, that's the short-term rental being permitted in the medium density residential zone. So you would say that as well, if that's the consensus of the committee. And I don't know if this is the option, but maybe not talking about it tonight for like a final answer to promote affordable housing, but perhaps tell the director staff to explore this option, come back to PAC or the council when we have some kind of more extensive research completed and work on it and get back to you, to the committee. Is that okay?
Yes, Mr. McCarrick.
Through the chair, the one key word here, though, I love all of this except the word promoting. When you're dealing with developers, you can't say you just want to promote them to do something or encourage them to do something or hope they will do something. You need to mandate that they do something. They shall do something. So I'm not sure what the right word here should be, but what I think staff needs to look at is there some type of mechanism that will require the developers to build a certain percentage of affordable housing?
I think the key word is options. So that way the options would be that we're going to have all these different options to look at, and then we can decide if we're going to mandate, think would be the maybe a wiser way. That's just, again, that's just my thoughts. Madam Mayor?
I think by taking that word out and just leaving to explore options for affordable housing in the municipality, such as, rather than requiring, because like I said before, there would be a development that we wouldn't have here because, again, CMHC did not approve that development for CMHC. And it comes down to what type of development it is, because a lot of times they don't feel that certain housing can coexist with others. So it's not us, it's the application went in, the application was denied. So requiring them to do this when their whole plan would have been, and this is an assisted living complex at that, a certain part of it. So it's not going to work in all of it.
Thank you, Madam Bollifer-Gatson. I think just for the exploring the options, we can still go back and say that it's mandated. That could be one of the options, right? That's what I was just trying to say. We're not painting anybody into a corner yet. I just thought it was, if we can make it more flexible for the staff to look at every, the world's your oyster. We do, don't do we not?
Sorry, yes. Did you want, there were the two other things, ask developers to contribute to public amenities and have commercial space on the ground floor. Did you want to include those in there, or is it too late of the night and maybe we can continue the discussion at the next meeting? I'm just thinking before you make your motion. Is staff just looking for the, like, some direction? Like,
right.
I think we already talked about, didn't we, that about making developers create something. Didn't we already talk about that? That we
2% right, yeah, and then yeah, it is yeah, part of the yeah, what's already, the bonus density. That's the idea
that we would already
provide developer incentive on the condition that developer would contribute something to the municipality. So it will be included in the motion. Absolutely. That may have been taken care of. So the only remaining item would be ground floor commercial use clause. I know. So currently, the current motion is that staff would suggest repealing. But if the committee decides it's otherwise,
commercial.
Oh, right. So I guess backtracking. So the existing regulation is that if you want to build some kind of apartments, you must have ground floor commercial. What we heard from the developer is that they don't want that. They just want 100% residential, and maybe they would have ground commercial, but for internal uses only. You know, like, so Stone Mound, if they were to have a hair salon, bar, restaurant, but it would be intended for the tenants. There, it would not be necessarily be public, which is not satisfying that ground floor commercial requirement. So the developers in the area have repeatedly asked municipal staff, "Is that, well, could we would like to conduct development just 100% residential? If not, it's not quote feasible." So the staff recommendation was to repeal the mandatory ground floor commercial area, but there was a counter suggestion from one of the members of the committee. So that is currently on the floor, the only remaining item.
Councillor Stanton.
Yeah, just for a little clarification, I was one of the authors of that original planning, and this was supposed to be a village. The intent back then when the land was bought, that it be a village with stores on, with commercial on the bottom and residential in the top, and people would walk and they would live here and enjoy all the shops and blah, blah, blah. The world changes, and we have to be willing to change a little bit with it. So this is long overdue, but let's try to get it right so that it'll last for the next 10 or 15 years like the last one did. But we didn't have much success here because there was no sale for the land. Nobody wanted to put money in the land and do. Now there seems to be some dollars out there to invest and to build. And if we don't take advantage of it while it's there, we might lose out because there's a lot of little towns and little areas that want development. And if these developers will go where they can build without too many hassles and too much regulation, and anybody thinks differently is fooling themselves, it's not going to happen. So this needs to be done, and it needs to be changed, because what we did back in 2006, was it? That's a long time ago. So we do need to change this Osprey Village. I'm only talking about Osprey Village. We're not talking about the municipality as a whole. We're talking about this little bit of land right here that we'd like to see developed and maybe put some density in the housing and provide housing is the most important thing. And the market will decide if they charge too much. Now, it may not all be low income, and it may not all be subsidized or affordable, but the market will determine what they can charge. And if you think it won't, just ask some of the people that built in Bridgewater and tried to rent for $2,000 a month. They're not renting their properties. Simple as that. They put the buildings up, and they may over time, but it's going to take some time to fill those buildings. And we need to be patient, and we need to try to work with people to get what we need here. And we do need the development. So,
thank you, Councillor Staton. So at this point for that, again, should we just do a round the room sort of thing? Is that the best way to do it, I guess? So, Mr. Hagel, your thoughts on the keeping the...
having businesses having to be on the bottom floor and then apartments at the top.
I'm all right with all residential.
As well as I am.
I am myself as well, Councillor Staton.
Yeah, I'm okay with residential.
Councillor Greig?
As am I. Thank you.
Mr. McGrath?
No, I believe there should be at least some type of compromise or middle ground where there is some commercial on the ground floor to try to create this village, as I heard earlier, especially given that one of the amendments is to say to the developers, you don't need to have any parking stalls, because right now the proposal is no minimum number of parking stalls. So that would encourage people who don't need to drive into Bridgewater. And how do you achieve that? By providing boutiques and other things as part of a commercial development on the ground floor. That is, in my opinion, based on my knowledge, best practice today. Certainly in all of the urban environments, all multi-level residential has ground floor commercial.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGrath. And now we have Councillor DeLong.
It's not a hill I'm willing to die on. I would like to see a commercial on the ground floor, but if it's going to drive away development, I guess that's my answer. No, does this also include amenities, though? Because that was also something that was on the floor for discussion. If developers were going to be required to put in some type of amenity.
No, that was not...
that's not what we're talking about.
No, okay. That's not what we're talking
right,
about.
Right, yeah, and the clarification is that is suggested in the, I suppose, the second motion, where PAC would direct staff to explore, and one of them being a developer providing amenity to the municipality or public uses. That is included elsewhere.
Okay. In that case, no. If residential is fine. Thank you.
And Kathleen Longgray.
I think it's probably going... My thoughts are a minority as well. I'm not comfortable with taking away parking and commercial, especially if we're going to be promoting this for seniors or assisted living. So... it's still a ways away from getting to Cookeville. So if you need to get some groceries or, you know, a cup of coffee or whatever, that's a challenge. That said, don't want to hold up the development because of it, but I don't like the precedent that it sets. But I'm going to say I think there should still be commercial, either commercial or parking. Or on the other side of it, and this is where the municipality, and I didn't bring this up earlier and I should have, is there some form of transport that easily gets people from there to where they can reach services?
Mr. King, did you want to respond to the transportation question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So the municipality is exploring alternative modes of transportation. We're looking at the AT infrastructure. We're working closely with the developers about the you know, third party or privately run shuttle like services. We're also working closely with the town to talk about some kind of an intermunicipal transit line services. Of course, those discussion takes, I suppose, more than a night, but staff is working closely with other parties in order to supplement the development that's about to come in Osprey Village. I am not confident if that was a satisfactory answer, but...
Sorry, Kathleen, through the chair. I think that's a good answer. It didn't come up. I'm kind of wishing that maybe that is something that had come up as part of this piece. Because if you originally planned to build a village and then you take away everything that makes it a village and it's just pure 100% residential, then all you've got is a bunch of people in boxes and nothing else there and not any way to get out or have people come in and visit. So I do have some concern about that. So that would be one of my, I'd like to see some of that come forward. I don't know if this is the time and place to ask for that, or if this is some guidance we can ask for the next time this comes back around.
So just a point of clarification, that was actually discussed. The transportation was discussed in this.
I may have missed that.
One of the, you know, when we're talking about emergency services, the water, that was also mentioned about that part. That doesn't take away from your concerns about parking or anything else, just for clarification, though.
I like the idea of shuttle. Like, I'm thinking if, you know, my parents relocated there, I would be concerned about their ability to access necessary services or even wantable services. So, agreed. Anyway, I think there's a trifecta there, and I don't think you can take away all three. If you're not going to have transport, you're not going to have parking, and you're not going to have commercial, we got to have one of them.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so at this point, I think there was six of us that were okay with no commercial uses, to be mandated, and two that did want commercial uses to be mandated. So
you can move forward.
So we can move forward.
Go back to your other...
Okay. Councillor Oikle, could you please read the motion?
Sure. To Chair and other members of our council, I move that the Planning Advisory Committee recommend to Municipal Council to approve the amendments to the Osprey Village Planning Document by adopting Bylaw 020E as amended in Appendix A of this staff report dated February the 24th, 2020, with the amendment to Section 64 of the Bylaw 020E by striking out proposed Clause 8.8.3.1, brackets C. And I so move. Oh, nope, that's a suggestion.
So thank you. So that is one motion, and once we debate about it, there is a second motion on the floor. So thank you.
So you need a seconder.
Oh, and I need a seconder.
Councillor
Statton.
So to be clear, so this is the motion to approve it as amended, amendment being that we're prohibiting a short-term rental use also in the medium density residential zone, which is R2. That is what the bolded section means. So
all in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, myself.
And the two online.
Yes. That was Councillor DeLong.
And
Kathleen Longray, I will say no.
Yeah, so all opposed. And Kathleen Longray, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So motion carried.
This is going to council, and you're going to have 11 more comments at least?
Yes.
When it gets to the council table. So even though we're recommending it to council, it doesn't mean that it's going to pass as it is. So just bear that in mind.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for that clarification. Okay, so now we have a second motion. Mr. Hagel, could you read this, please?
Yes, to the chair, that the PAC directs staff to explore options for affordable housing in the municipality, such as in the inclusionary zone, affordable housing, cash in lieu, and bonus density.
All in favor?
No.
Oh, a second. Sorry. A seconder. Councillor Greek. All in favor? And the two people online.
Councillor DeLong, yes.
Kathleen Longray, yes.
Okay. Motion carried.
You can defer the next item. We can come back to another meeting. We don't have to discuss that tonight.
Okay. Okay. So anyways, thank you very much for all your discussion with the Osprey Village Plan. And so our next matter was 7.2 Policy 066A, Engagement Program Policy. And so do we have to do a motion to defer?
We'll just leave that undiscussed, okay. And so that will come back on your next agenda. Item.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The number 8 Heritage Advisory Committee matters.
Yeah, there's no Heritage Advisory Committee matters.
9 added items.
There's no added items.
10 in camera.
No in camera.
Our next meeting is Thursday, March 24th.
That's correct.
And so now I need a motion to adjourn. Councillor Green and Councillor Oikel. And we're everyone in favor?
Yes.
Motion carried. Thank you very much.
So Sandra, you've seen the 8 o'clock.